to the morning show theme song on this, what is it, Wednesday, October 14, 2015. Thanks so much for listening, tuning in. And yes, I did. I didn't watch the entire debate. Almost all of it. I was at a little restaurant, Smoke, a barbecue place in Bethesda, Maryland. Very cute little place. Always wanted to go in there. Never, relatively new. Never been there before. And it was packed with Bernie supporters. It was one of the places where there were Bernie debate watch parties. And it was very nice. It was a warm evening. Of course, it's warm because we've got global burning. It was a warm evening in Bethesda, very nice out, and I sat outside. I was wearing my bike clothes, so that was probably the best place for me anyway because I wasn't looking so, dressed for to impress folks, let's put it that way. And my sense during the debate was that it was a pretty nip-and-tuck affair between Sanders and Clinton. I thought, on balance, Bernie got the best lines out, a few of them. I thought his comment, obviously they were just talking about this. Everyone's remarking about enough with the damn emails. He's getting a lot of praise for that. I thought he handled it well. You know, I think that the email situation is relevant. I think it does demonstrate very poor judgment on Clinton's part at the time. And now it demonstrates dishonesty because she refuses to acknowledge she broke federal rules. And I'm really sick and tired of that. But in the moment, I thought Bernie did what he had to do, which was basically say, you know, look, this isn't really what this campaign should be all about. I think it should be partially about it because it's character. It's a character issue. It demonstrates a character flaw in Clinton. That said, I thought Bernie handled it about as well as he could. He made himself look presidential. You know, he made himself look a little bit above the fray. So I was okay with it. I don't know what else he could have done. He could have said what I've been saying, you know, you did break the rules and you keep saying you didn't and I'm sick of it. But I think that would have irritated a lot of people. He really needs the media, or he needed another candidate. Lincoln Chafee tried. He tried a little bit, but it didn't come over very well at all when Chafee tried to, you know, make that an issue, make the emails an issue. All right, let's go. This was, I thought, Bernie's best. Honestly, this was, I thought, Bernie's best moment. It came relatively early in the debate. You're not hearing a lot about this moment from the pundits who, you know, handled the post-debate discussion. In fact, I really think the pundits have been dropping the ball, all talking about how great Hillary was, how she did so great, I thought she was good. I did. I mean, I thought she performed well. And that's what it really is. That's what's the most frustrating thing. It's a performance. This isn't really about who has the right positions on the right issues, who's going to lead our nation best. It's just about how quick-witted they are. Did they prepare for this question correctly? Are they caught on camera smirking? Is there a hitch in their response? And that's crazy. It's a crazy way to judge candidates. Debating skills. Ted Cruz is supposedly a great debater. He was on the Princeton Debate Club. He'd be the world's worst president. The worst we've ever had. Sure, you could say, well, Abe Lincoln was a great debater. I think debating is valuable, watching, observing. I've called for more debates, as long as they're debates where you truly hash out differences and where the analytical skills of the candidates are tested. I don't think you get that in this kind of free-for-all, everybody jumps in, interrupts each other. I don't see that. That said, I thought they were both fine. I thought Clinton was fine. I thought Sanders was fine. I would say both are still standing. If you want to give the debate on points to one or the other, go right ahead. I don't have a strong sense. I will note, again, my feeling was Bernie did a little bit better, but not a lot better. If that's, you know, what you care about, if you care about who won, the polling will decide. We'll see within a few days whether either candidate got a little bit of a bump. My sense, probably Hillary will get a bit of a bump. Here's why. All those polls now have Biden in them. And most of the candidate, and most of the voters who say they were going to vote for Biden, say that if he's not in the race, they're going to vote for Clinton. He's probably not going to be in the race. Even if he is, even if he announces, he looks like a really, really a tardy party crasher. He is a Johnny come too lately, in my view, at this point. So many of those who have been leaning Biden or anyone but Hillary or Biden, because I don't like Hillary that much and I don't want to coronate her after her husband was king. I don't want her to be queen. You know, that attitude, which I think, you know, we should have some sympathy for. I have some sympathy for that view. I have some, not that much. If I thought she was the best candidate. Look, if Eleanor Roosevelt had run for president, I probably would have voted for her if I could have voted. I think she would have been the best candidate. I would have voted for her. So I don't think the fact that Hillary Clinton's husband was president means she shouldn't be president, but I also think it doesn't mean she should be. And in general, I'm less sanguine about dynasties. I don't think they're an absolute disaster, but I also don't think they're necessarily the best solution either to our problems. I think Bernie's our best candidate. I think he's proven it for decades. I think the debate probably helped on balance Clinton, even if I don't think she necessarily was the best on stage. I think what she probably was able to accomplish, and by the way, I want your thoughts on this, 844-4-HELGY, 844-367-4254. We're going to try to get at least one caller to comment with me. I've reached out to several, and so far I have been rebuffed. I tried to get Clifton Brown, but he is in Chicago. I think he's getting married or something. I'm not sure. Rich Rubino from HuffPost was tweeting last night, as was I. By the way, I should have told people I will tweet. So if you want to sign up for my Twitter feed, at Hal Ginsberg, go ahead. And I did tweet quite a bit, especially the first part. I have to admit, I only watched the first two sections. I only watched and listened to the first two sections because you know, after a while, I just got bored. I mean, it went on forever. It was like over 2 hours, right? Well over 2 hours. So I missed the marijuana questions, I have to admit. But early on, I thought came this winner from Bernie. And we do also have, I see Julius calling. Julius, I don't know if you can hear me. I'm not going to be able to get to you yet, but I'll get to you in a few minutes. Here's Bernie. I think his best, honestly, and came very early in the debate.
Well, let's understand that when we talk about Syria, you're talking about a quagmire in a quagmire. You're talking about groups of people trying to overthrow Assad, other groups of people fighting ISIS. You're talking about people who are fighting ISIS using their guns to overthrow Assad and vice versa. I'm the former chairman, Anderson, of the Senate Veterans Committee. And in that capacity, I learned a very powerful lesson about the cost of war. And I will do everything that I can to make sure that the United States does not get involved in another quagmire like we did in Iraq, the worst foreign policy blunder in the history of this country. We should be putting together a coalition of Arab countries who should be leading the effort. We should be supportive. But I do not support American ground troops in Syria.
On this issue of foreign policy, I want to go to Denabash.
Governor Chafee, you were the only Republican in the Senate to vote against the Iraq War. You say Secretary Clinton should be disqualified.
All right, that's unfortunate. Yeah, he was going to say, yeah, she should be disqualified for voting for the war. That was Bernie's best moment when he said this was the worst foreign policy blunder in our history. And it put this burden squarely on Clinton to acknowledge and to try to explain what a big, big, big mistake she made. And I don't think she was successful. I wasn't persuaded. I don't know if you were, but I felt her answer was weak. And I was going to play more from Chafee just because he was continuing where Bernie went. And I think that was the other reason why it was a very powerful moment for Bernie, because he was putting that squarely on her, that worst foreign policy mistake in our history. I don't think that's too strong. That was his best moment, and it's been completely ignored by the post-debate punditry. And why? Well, what other reason can there be? They want the narrative to be Hillary won. They want Hillary to be the Democratic candidate. She is okay for them. They are comfortable with her. That's a good reason for you to be uncomfortable with her. All right, I'll be back. We'll have Julius and more right after this.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News, a production of Diversified Media Enterprises. I'm Doug Cunningham. One of the starkest contrasts between Democratic and Republican presidential candidates is the loud and clear professed support by Democrats of the right of workers to organize unions and bargain collectively. As they took the stage for the first Democratic presidential candidate debate, both Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders left no room for doubt as to where they stand on the rights of working Americans. Clinton took her support for unions to the Las Vegas culinary workers at a Donald Trump-owned hotel.
I think you have a right to organize. You have a right to safe working conditions. You have a right to a living wage.
Yeah.
And you have to say yes to all of that, and you have to say no to efforts to prevent you from organizing, to prevent you from having the kind of working conditions you deserve, the kind of wages that are going to give you a living wage. And that means saying no to Donald Trump. And you should not stand in the way of the right to organize, because that's what builds the middle class.
Bernie Sanders, with the strongest pro-labor voting record in Congress, is co-sponsor of the Workplace Democracy Act. It would empower workers to form unions and punish employers for violating that basic right.
If workers in this country want to exercise their constitutional right to join a union, they must be allowed to do that. We are here today, all of us, to send a very loud and clear message to corporate America and employers all over this country.
Yeah.
We will no longer tolerate CEOs who fire workers for exercising their constitutional right to form a union. Woo! When unions grow, the middle class grows. Woo! And when the middle class grows, America does well.
United Teachers of Los Angeles rallied Tuesday to protest what they say is an attempt to dismantle public education in Los Angeles. The union says billionaire businessman Eli Broad's foundation is working with the Waltons of Walmart and other billionaires on a plan to take half of LA's students out of public schools and put them in unregulated non-union charters within 8 years. The union says that losing that many public school students, quote, would trigger a...
All right, Delaney Nord, thank you so much for the Morning Show theme song. Yeah, getting a late start there, by the way, Julius. Thank you for calling in and telling me there was dead air. I was sending audio out, but it was not being received, and I'm very, very sorry about that. Very disappointed indeed. Seems like we can never get everything perfect. So, I think I'm on now. I'm going to tell. Hopefully, I'll hear myself in my other ear in a moment. Yeah, the big debate. I mean, this was the topic. So there you go. Yeah, I can hear the self. So we're broadcasting now. Yeah, so the big debate last night, my sense was that it was pretty much a toss-up in terms of who won. It was neither of the top two, Clinton or Sanders, was able to knock the other one out, or really even knock down, the opponent. So it was a technical fight, and I thought each scored some points, each got a few, good punches in. What will happen? What's my prediction going forward? I think Hillary, on balance, will come out stronger, and here's why I say that. because I think the folks who were maybe leaning towards Joe Biden but had indicated in various polls that she was their second choice, I think they're going to feel comfortable with her now. I really do. I think that to the extent there was discomfort with Clinton because of maybe the emails, because of the issue that, you know, she's a little bit flip-floppy, or she's a lot flip-floppy. She's a flip-flopper, let's face it. But for many in the Democratic base, they instinctively like Hillary Clinton, probably women even more so than men. They feel that she's been through a lot. This is how a lot of Democrats, moderate Democrats, feel. Midwestern Democrats, remember, she's from Illinois. Professional women Democrats, again, Democrats of color, they basically like Hillary Clinton. And I think last night she came across as likable. So the doubts that have crept in because she used the private email server, because she didn't preserve her emails at State Department, because she has been a center moderate, not a progressive, I think the doubts that have crept in to a large degree were quite probably, quite possibly alleviated for many Dems. I don't think she did any better than Bernie. I think on balance, Bernie was a little stronger. I know that's not what the pundits say. I know the pundits go the other way. The pundits say, oh, no, she was great. She killed it. She kicked it. I don't see it that way. It was pretty much a tie. And each one had her or his strong moments. Probably, I would say on balance, Sanders was a little better. Sanders' best moment came very early in the debate. Now, it wasn't, a lot of you are going to say it was, his best moment came very early on. It wasn't when he said, yeah, I'm sick of the damn emails. Everyone's talking about that. Everyone's talking about, I'm sick of the damn emails. I'm sick of the damn, that. And it was, he came across strong there, no question. But it wasn't his best moment. And I'll tell you why it wasn't. Because it actually redounded to Hillary Clinton's benefit. It took the issue off the table. I thought Bernie handled about as well as he could. I mean, what was he supposed to do? He couldn't beat her up. He can't go on TV, a national audience, and say, with those four guys all standing around Hillary Clinton, this debate is supposed to be, everyone has said, I pretty much agree with this, it's supposed to be about drawing contrast between the Democrats and the Republicans, convincing Americans that we are the mature party. We are the party that's prepared to lead. We're not a clown show. And the basic narrative on the left, especially after Kevin McCarthy said, you know, we took down Hillary Clinton. We brought her numbers down. He bragged about it on the Hannity show. The basic narrative has taken hold, not just in the left, where it's been for a while, but in the center as well. There's nothing there. There's no there whatsoever. And with regard to Benghazi, there isn't. But there is a real question about the judgment that Hillary Clinton showed when she set up her private email server and did not preserve the emails at State. There's a question about her, obviously, her law-abiding ways, because the rule was clear. She was required to preserve her emails at the State Department. She didn't do that. And there's a question about her secrecy. And these all go to basic weaknesses that people perceive in Hillary Clinton. But Sanders couldn't bring that up. He just couldn't do it because the broader narrative on the left is Hillary Clinton did nothing wrong. This is all, this entire email discussion is a controversy. It's fake. It's phony. It's made up to embarrass her, and there's no reality to it. That's unfortunate. Because it's unfortunate if you don't think she should be our next president. It's unfortunate if you don't think she's the best candidate, because it does reflect very poorly on her judgment. That was a good moment when he said, I'm sick of the damn emails. That wasn't his best moment. This was his best moment.
Understand that when we talk about Syria, you're talking about a quagmire in a quagmire. You're talking about groups of people trying to overthrow Assad, other groups of people fighting ISIS. You're talking about people who are fighting ISIS using their guns to overthrow Assad and vice versa. I'm the former chairman, Anderson, of the Senate Veterans Committee. And in that capacity, I learned a very powerful lesson about the cost of war. And I will do everything that I can to to make sure that the United States does not get involved in another quagmire like we did in Iraq, the worst foreign policy blunder in the history of this country. We should be putting together a coalition of Arab countries who should be leading the effort. We should be supportive. But I do not support American ground troops in Syria.
On this issue?
All right, and I thought that was his strongest moment, the worst foreign policy blunder. And putting it, obviously, squarely on Hillary Rodham Clinton because she voted in favor of the authorization to use force. So I thought that was, without question, Bernie's best moment. It's interesting to me that, again, the punditocracy has all concluded that Hillary won this debate. She won it going away. She killed it, according to MSNBC. CNN, the same. New York Times, she was the best out there. That's what they said. And Ryan Lizza, who is this centrist who writes for the New Yorker. People in the New Yorker is such a great magazine. I don't get it. They have some good articles. It's very hoity-toity. But their politics are very moderate, very DLC democratic. Their economics, very much so. There's no real focus on the needs of the poor or on basic economic injustice. It's not in the New Yorker. New Yorker, it's for a certain kind of upper middle class to wealthy New Yorker, and they don't want them to be too uncomfortable. They don't want their readers to be too uncomfortable with their money. They don't want to send out a message, hey, you have too much. A couple reasons they don't want to send out that message. They don't want to send out because people don't want to hear that. If their readers start reading an article after article how their wealth, how their home in Scarsdale and their second house in the Hamptons and their condo in Palm Beach, they start reading that it's that wealth that they've aggregated for themselves means less for other people, you know, they're going to stop reading the New Yorker. That's one reason. The other reason is, look, who advertises in New Yorker? Tiffany, Fendi, all, you know, the highest end products and services. And if people who read the New Yorker start thinking, you know, I really live a little too large, I got a little too much, I'm spending too much when others, I'm too extravagant in my lifestyle compared to other people, they'll stop buying all those high-end baubles. And that's not good for the New Yorker either. So you don't get the truth. You really, very few places you get the truth. You get it from me. Ryan Liz is saying Clinton won the debate because all the rest of them are fools. I think was his term. I believe that was his tweet. It's ridiculous. Actually, you know who came across pretty well, I thought, to my way of thinking, although he wasn't strong, but his commentary was intelligent, and that was Lincoln Chafee. He's a good man. He wasn't powerful, but he was decent, and that goes a long way with me. And I think that should go a long way with you, too. Don't we want a decent president? Don't we want a caring president? All right, 844-4-HELGY, 844-367-4254. Let's go to a quick break here. And sorry, we got a little bit of a late start. We'll be back after this.
This is Scientific American's 60-Second Science. I'm Christopher Intagliata. Got a minute? If you're lost, you need a map and compass. The map pinpoints where you are, and the compass orients you in the right direction. Migratory birds, on the other hand, can traverse entire hemispheres and end up just a couple miles from where they bred last year, using their senses alone. Their compass is the sun, the stars, and the Earth's magnetic field, but their map is a little more mysterious. One theory goes that they use olfactory cues, how a place smells. Another is that they rely on their sense of magnetism. Researchers in Russia investigated the map issue in a past study by capturing Eurasian reed warblers on the Baltic Sea as they flew northeast towards their breeding grounds near St. Petersburg. Then they moved the birds 600 miles east, near Moscow, and the birds, they just reoriented themselves to the northwest, correctly determining their new position. Now the same scientists have repeated that experiment, only this time they didn't move the birds at all. They just put them in cages that simulated the magnetic field of Moscow, while still allowing the birds to experience the sun, stars, and smells of the Baltic. Once again, the birds reoriented themselves to the northwest, suggesting that the magnetic field alone, regardless of smells or other cues, is enough to alter the birds' mental map. The study is in the journal Current Biology. And if you're envious of that sixth sense, keep in mind that since the Earth's magnetic field fluctuates, the researchers say magnetic route finding is best for crude navigation, meaning for door-to-door directions, you're still better off with your GPS. Thanks for the minute. For Scientific American 60 Second Science, I'm Christopher Intagliata.
I'm going to get the numbers. Dow down 18 points now to 17,064. NASDAQ up 5 to 4802. S&P 500 down 1 to 2003. Gold is up $9 an ounce to 1,174. And oil is down 48 cents a barrel, currently priced at $46.22. All right, I had mentioned Ryan Lissa. He is a political reporter at the New Yorker magazine, the, you know, very, very upscale, very prestigious New Yorker, and his Twitter feed, tweet, Hillary Clinton won because all of her opponents are terrible? I so don't get that. That is just so wrong, and it really reflects, so poorly on Lizza that you would see it that way. I mean, obviously Sanders was very, very strong in his response to the question of Syria. What should we do about Syria? And he answered it very clearly. Hey, the big mistake that we've made, perhaps the biggest ever, the biggest foreign policy blunder ever, may have been Iraq. We can't repeat it. We can't be going into Syria now half-cocked like we did into Iraq. And by the way, if anybody didn't notice, Hillary Clinton voted in favor of that war on Iraq. And now she's saying we need a no-fly zone over Syria. We need to build a coalition. We need to have the Arab countries take leadership here. It was a great answer. It was spot on. Now, I'm not saying he was aces all the way through. I think he struggled with a question about the guns and gun control. There's no good answer. He should have voted for the Brady Bill. The Brady Bill has saved lives. So I'm not just going to say Bernie gets an A+. And I thought Hillary did was very effective in a lot of sections of this debate. But to claim, as Lizza does, that all her opponents were terrible, is ridiculous. It's absurd. It's just wrong-headed. All right, 844-4-HELDGY. I'd love your take. 844-367-4254. 844-4-HELDGY. Everywhere you go, Clinton won. Democratic debate turns Hillary Clinton's way after months of difficulty. Her performance at the first Democratic presidential debate was so commanding that even her greatest vulnerability, the lingering controversy over her private email practices as Secretary of State, ended up redounding to her benefit. Wow, that is quite an endorsement. I told you, what did MSNBC say? Hillary Clinton killed it. And CNN equally positive. Clinton, confident, poised. I don't see it. She was fine. Did she just knock everything out of the park? I don't see that at all. And I'm really, it's kind of disgusting that this is the narrative that's emerged. Because if you listen to the, and I looked everywhere, there's very, very little on the focus groups. Did you watch the post debate on CNN or on MSNBC? I assume there was a focus group on each network. You know, where they have people who watch in some room together and then they ask them questions about the debate and then you find out what they thought. According to Bill Press, he had a CNN focus group member in contact with him who had been chosen to be in the focus group, let Bill know, and then told Bill this morning that the focus group felt that Bernie won, that they were unanimous in concluding that Bernie won, but that they also thought Hillary would win the nomination. She would be the next candidate for the Democrats. And I looked everywhere on the internet to find video of that focus group. I got to believe if CNN had a focus group, they went to the focus group. They had someone in the room with a focus group, I don't know, Van Jones or somebody, and ask them questions. And there's nothing. I could not find the video. I guess CNN doesn't want you to know that Hillary did not win the debate, according to the people off the street that they had commandeered for the very purpose of giving you the woman and man on the street take of the debate. Their pundits want you to hear from them that Hillary won. MSNBC wants you to hear from it that Hillary won. But what do people, you know, just you and me think? Well, that's not apparently what we think. Fusion, I never heard of fusion. I got two focus groups where I was able to actually get audio video. So here's, is this the fusion? Let's see. I got audio video from two groups, Fusion and Fox. Fox was Frank once. I take Fox with a grain of salt. Fusion is, Univision. So it's with Jorge Ramos. But they got a very mixed crowd there. It's not just, clearly not just Latino focused. So here's America with Jorge Ramos, fusion.net, and just a very brief clip.
Right now, in your judgment, based on who the folks you have in front of you are, who is winning this debate thus far, in your opinion, based on what you've just seen thus far? Who do you think won the debate tonight?
Hold on.
Close Ooh, enough. All right, so it looks like we've got, what is that, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9.
I'm at a 50-50
split. So it looks like the young millennial voters here in our group say Bernie Sanders won the debate tonight with a few votes out there for Hillary Clinton.
All right, so there you go. So according to Fusion, the young voters, they weren't that young. I guess they say millennials. So what does that mean? That they're between, if you're a millennial, I guess you're between about 21 and about 35. So that looks about right. That's about what they look like. There's some gray in one of the guy's beards there. 8-3. For Sanders. Now, take that for what it's worth, but that's a truly independent group. As far as we can tell, as far as in, assuming that Univision did it with some degree of scientifically just ripped, you know, just taking people where they found them, then that's meaningful to me. That group said Bernie won, 8-3. Let's go to Frank Luntz. This is a Fox. I don't trust them as far as I can throw them, but Luntz does seem, when you see his focus groups, he does seem to try to get it right as best he can. So let's listen to this. Now remember, all the punditry has said Hillary kicked it. Everyone's saying Hillary, you know, arrested whatever slide she was having. She's back on top. She's rolling now. We don't have to worry about her anymore. There's no need for Joe Biden to get into the race because, after all, we can't have the Democratic Socialists win. So that's the basic take now, as I understand it, is that Hillary won that debate going away. Where does the Washington Examiner, this is why, from the Washington Examiner, but they're connected with Fox. What does Frank Luntz say?
You walked in here supporting Hillary Clinton, raise your hands. Half of you. How many of you are still supporting Hillary Clinton? Only a small percentage. So who won the debate?
Bernie Sanders!
Give me a word or phrase to describe Bernie Sanders tonight.
For the people. Strong.
Straightforward.
Confident.
Insider and outsider.
Direct.
Sincere.
Powerful.
Educated.
Smart.
But he's a socialist. He's proud of being a socialist. Do you really think this guy can win? Do you? In the back.
I don't think he can. I don't think he can. He's a populist. I understand the appeal of his proposals, but I don't think he can win.
I think the unrest in the country regarding looking for radical change to some of the problems we've been facing is so deep that this could be the year that someone like that gets in.
So I want to show the people back home something. The highest moment of the debate, the one that this group thought was absolutely incredible, was about Hillary Clinton, but it wasn't delivered by Hillary Clinton. It was delivered by Bernie Sanders. Let's listen.
Let me say something that may not be great politics, but I think the Secretary is right. And that is that the American people are sick and tired of hearing about your damn emails.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
You know? The American people want to know whether we're going to have a democracy or an oligarchy as a result of Citizens United. Enough of the emails. Let's talk about the real issues facing America.
Incredible. So I got to ask you, why was that moment so powerful to you that you guys were in the 90s? I heard several people saying you wanted to turn your dial beyond 100. What was it?
He said, enough about the email. Let's get to the topics. He was almost protecting her and being a man about it, a gentleman, and saying, let's get to what the real topics are. I thought that was very respectable.
Sorry. It's just such a non-issue. And I'm glad that he addressed it like that and got it out of the way.
What I liked is that she was stronger on the issue than she was, which scared me, because I wish that she would have said it to protect herself more than he had to say for her.
Is tired of the focus on personal infractions. We're looking at larger macro issues that face all of us. The emails are not one of those.
So that's the Frank Luntz focus group, and it seems so clear from that group of 28 Democrats that Bernie won. Bernie won that debate. Half of them went in, about half the nation, half the Democrats right now support, or at least before the debate, half supported Hillary Clinton, and then the rest were split, mostly between Bernie Sanders and Joe Biden, with some undecided. And if you listen to that focus group, the 20 Democrats, only a few still supported Clinton after the debate, and there was consensus that Bernie won. And yet the narrative has taken hold in all of the media that Clinton kicked it. It makes no sense. It's not represent. Are they lying? I mean, I think they believe it. I thought she performed well. I do. I'm not saying she was a disaster by any means. But to just declare victory when you have the only two I could find, couldn't find CNN. Now, I know CNN had a focus group, or at least according to press, they must have had a focus group, because the one of the members called to him or emailed him and said, hey, I'm on the focus group. I'm on the team here. And according to this CNN focus group member, his group concluded that Bernie won. So again, I don't get this idea. I mean, I understand why. It's because the media wants you to vote for Clinton. They want Clinton to win. They do not want the Democratic Socialists. That's what the media wants. That's what big media wants. And given that's what big media wants, I think you should want just the opposite. All right, let's go back to the debate. We'll continue just a little bit more on the issue of Iraq and the terrible blunder, the mistake that we made as a nation in 2000, well, I think we made a mistake as a nation in 2001 when the Electoral College was given to George W. Bush. And that kind of paved the way for this disastrous war in Iraq. That said, Hillary Clinton helped. She voted for it. She voted to authorize it. Here's Lincoln Chafee.
She voted in favor of using force in Iraq. She has since said that her vote was a mistake. Why isn't that good enough?
Well, we just heard Senator Sanders say that it's the worst decision in American history. That's very significant. The worst decision in American history, I just heard from Senator Sanders. So as we look ahead, if you're going to make those poor judgment calls at a critical time in our history, we just finished with the Vietnam era, getting back into another quagmire. If you're looking ahead, and you're looking at someone that made that poor decision in 2002 to go into Iraq when there was no real evidence of weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. I know, because I did my homework. And so that's an indication of how...
No real evidence of weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. Biggest foreign policy blunder ever. He was a Republican. Lincoln Chafee was a Republican at that moment. He was perfectly capable. He was obscene. That we were looking at a run up to war, kind of a just a trumped up case. designed to, I guess, empower W. Cheney. Wolfie have their bizarre international engineering program, their Dr. Frankenstein monster they're going to create out of the old Iraq? He got it. Bernie got it. Jim Webb got it. And Martin O'Malley says he got it. He wasn't in Congress at the time, so he didn't vote on it. It's hard to understand why this isn't viewed by more of you as a deal breaker when it comes to Hillary Clinton's candidacy.
Someone will perform in the future, and that's what's important.
Secretary Clinton, he's questioning your judgment. Well, I recall very well being on a debate stage, I think about 25 times, with then-Senator Obama debating this very issue. After the election, he asked me to become Secretary of State. He valued my judgment, and I spent a lot of time with him.
Do you find that a persuasive response, that I must have good judgment because Obama asked me to be Secretary of State? I don't buy that. There are political considerations involved. And I'm not saying her judgment's always bad, but it was really, really, really bad when it came to Iraq. So I that kind of an answer just doesn't, that just doesn't flow as far as I'm concerned.
In the Situation Room, going over some very difficult issues, you know, I agree completely. We don't want American troops on the ground in Syria. I never said that. What I said was we had to
And by the way, that's a straw man, because Bernie didn't say she wanted troops on the ground. He said that should be the last thing we do. But she did call. But she did call years ago for more training for our advisors to go into Syria to provide, you know, person-to-person training. It's pretty close to boots on the ground, isn't it? By the way, Jeremy, he will be calling in a few minutes, so we'll get his take. And I'm going to be very open-ended. I'm not going to be, you know, doing my usual cross-examination with Jeremy. I just want to get his take on what he thought were the best moments, whether he thought this was a good night for the Democrats in general. All right, let's get back to Clinton Sanders.
Coalition, in fact, something that I worked on before I left the State Department to do. And yes, it should include Arabs, people in the region, because what I worry about is what will happen with ISIS gaining more territory, having more reach, and frankly posing a threat to our friends and neighbors in the region and far beyond. So I think whether you're talking about the tough decision that President Obama had to make about Osama bin Laden, where I was one of his few advisors, or putting together that coalition to impose sanctions on Iran, I think I have a lot of evidence
Senator Sanders, I want to bring you in here. My question for you is, as a congressman, you voted against the Iraq War, you voted against the Gulf War, you're just talking about Syria, but under what circumstances would a President Sanders actually use force?
Let me just respond to something the Secretary said. First of all, she is talking about, as I understand, a no-fly zone in Syria, which I think is a very dangerous situation, could lead to real problems. Second of all, I heard the same evidence from President Bush and Dick Cheney and Don Rumsfeld about why we should overthrow Saddam Hussein and get involved in the war. I would urge people to go to BernieSanders.com, hear what I said in 2002.
Yeah, that's a very, let me just, no question. See, this is where she had her biggest weakness. This was Sanders' best moment, was when he brought up the fact that this was the worst foreign policy blunder in American history. And I think that was his best moment by far, not when he said enough about the damn emails. That said, it made him very likable that he made that comment. Let's go to Oakland, my good friend Douglas. Hey, Douglas. Oh, I'm sorry, Tennessee. Carl, right? Tennessee, Carl?
Yeah.
Okay.
Hey,
Nashville,
hey,
go ahead.
Well, you know, first of all, the most important thing, and let's not let this escape us, my Cubs beat the Cardinals. We never beat the Cardinals.
That was amazing.
You don't understand.
What a win.
I explained it to my wife. I said, this is the Cardinals to the Cubs. 18-wheeler means speed bump.
That was a really big win. But you know what? A lot of analysts said beforehand that the Cubs and the Pirates were really the two best teams in the National League, even though I know the Cardinals had a better record. I think
they were lying to you.
I was really upset.
Never beat the Cardinals.
Can I just make this point? I didn't like that one game wild card for this reason. I didn't want to see either of those two teams.
Stupid.
I didn't want either of those two teams out of it after one game. They are either two of the three best in the National League.
Yeah.
Let
the
Mets
Giants
and the Dodgers.
Out of that game last year and won the championship.
Well, the Giants won that, and then they won. But and of course I'm a Giants fan. But it should have been the Mets and the Dodgers are having an incredible series. But really, those were the two weaker teams in the National League. So they probably should have played in the one game.
Just put in one more team. What is that going to hurt? Put one more team in.
And then you have two byes. So you basically like football.
Yeah.
But the problem is what they have to do then is cut the regular season shorter. Because it goes on until November. It gets cold. It snows.
Yeah.
This is going to sound crazy, Carl. I'd like to see a return to the old setup where you just have two divisions in each league. So you have a West
that'll
and an
happen.
East.
That,
I know.
That'll never happen.
Because there's too much money. Too much money.
Because money. You know.
You got a great team. You got a great team. You got a great pitcher there in Arrieta. You got great closers.
And they're all about 12 years old.
This kid Rizzo. And the
all
other
of them.
And the rookie, who's that rookie, the big strong kid, he just crushes it.
Bryant,
but there's Schwarber, that kid Schwarber.
Yeah.
Oh, you've got a great team. I like all your players, Castro, they're all good.
Yeah.
It's a solid team.
And Castro's the old guy on the team.
He is.
He's like
25.
Like 26.
He's 25, I think, something like that.
It's amazing what they've done. To bring in a guy like Madden. Good move.
I like Joe Maddon. Very good manager.
Because traditionally what the Cubs organization would do, they know the suckers, I mean the fans, will love them no matter what.
That's true.
And they know even if the suckers, I mean the fans, stop coming to the stadium, it is a tourist attraction. So what they traditionally would do is they'll find a guy like a Sammy Sosa or Mark Grace that the fans just absolutely, I mean sucker fans love, and they'll overpay them. And they'll have like me and you as their release pitchers. They always done cheap things like
hey,
that
sad,
because they know that the suckers fans will keep coming.
Very sad year. Ernie Banks. I got Bernie in my mind. Ernie Banks, Mr. Cub, dying in January, and they showed video of him. I guess singing. Right?
Singing. A couple of games ago.
It was very nice. That was
they
very nice.
Ball game.
Where
very
they honored
nice.
Him.
Well, Now, as far as the debate, I have to push back a little bit. Bernie did well. Bernie did very well. Hillary did very well.
I think she did. I really do. You know what? I know I'm playing her worst moment. She was very strong. There's no question.
Yeah.
I think she emerged. Go ahead.
I think you're a little too cynical when you're trying to tear down on what she said about President Obama. One of the things that I do like about President Obama, he seems like the type of guy that I would be in my business. I don't have to like you to make money off you. And what I mean by that is I don't have to like you to bring you into my organization if I think you're the best person for this particular job. I don't think, obviously he's a politician and politics plays into a lot of things that politicians do, but I believe that he thought that she would be the best person for that position.
I agree with you. I think that he...
I think that was one of... What you picked up as one of her worst lines. I think that was one of her best lines.
No, I think it was a good line. I think it was a good line. Then I misstated... I wasn't clear in my view.
Oh, let me...
It was a good line, but I don't buy it as a good enough answer. I don't find it...
I do buy it as a good enough answer because that let me know that that President Obama... trust her judgment. And what she effectively did, you have to think these things through. It's three-dimensional chess. And what she effectively did, she looked into the mic to the camera and said to the Democrat in 2014 that ran away from President Obama and still lost. She looked at them in their face and she looked in that camera and looked at Joe Biden and said, "Hey Joe, I'm tying myself to the president. This space right here that you might want to get in on is occupied. That's what she did.
Oh,
when
no.
She, when she brought in,
I hear
brought
you.
In Barack Obama like that.
I get that. And I also thought it was nice when Sanders said that he thought the president was doing a good job on Syria. Because, you know, let's not bash. If you don't need to go after the president, don't. And the president's been doing a good job on Syria. I thought they all did a nice job, especially Hillary. And I think one of her strong suits throughout the debate where she turned against the Republicans several times. She said, look, we all pretty much agree the real problem is the Republican Party. I thought she did that well.
Yeah, did you see,
she was good on guns. By
the
way, she was good on guns, and I'll play that later. I thought she was quite good. No, I didn't see the Croft interview with Obama. You know what?
Yeah.
I did not see that, and I understood it didn't go over so well, is my understanding.
Well,
I didn't hear
Well, no, well, here's the thing. I don't know, for President Obama must be a nice guy, because I don't know why he keeps giving this guy interviews, because he's obviously a partisan. He obviously wishes like hell that he was on Fox News. So whenever he gets Obama, he always trying to get them with gotcha questions. But what Obama said about Russia, was absolutely point on. This right here is my imitation of President Obama talking on the phone with Putin. No, please don't get involved with Syria. Please don't get in this quagmire. Okay, go ahead. You understand? And he was just damned to say that the president was giving his leadership.
No, I'm with you on that too. I think it was fine. And Bernie handled that well too when he said, you know, look,
yeah.
I think it's not working out for Putin. And then Anderson pushed.
Why keep putting money?
Yeah,
listen,
exactly.
One of the things we always talk about, the people always talk about, they want authenticity. They want politicians to be real. And President Obama saw after a year the training of the Syrians, moderates, wasn't working.
Yeah.
Cut ties.
Well,
cut ties. Cut your losses and go. And I like a leader that will say, you know what? This is not working. We're not going to continue doing this. And we cut ties. That's leadership.
All right.
And the lie that they spent so much X amount of money. No, the money has been allocated towards that, but they had spent nowhere near all the money that they're spending.
So do you? I got to let you go in a moment. Do you then agree with Donald Trump when he says, "Hey, if Putin wants to fight ISIS, let him. We'll just sit back and." Do you agree with Trump on
that? The only thing that I agree, because if Putin wants to put a big bullseye on Moscow, that's on him. And I guarantee you, it's easier for them to get into their country.
It's so
and
obvious.
Do some damage
by the way, this is an easy one, Carl, and it's amazing to me how the right wing. I mean, they're praising Putin. They love Putin for all this. He's killing his own himself and his country by doing this. But, you know, all right, fine.
What we need to do is get our right-wing friends a map. They're closer to Russia than they are to us.
Well,
as a matter of
and
fact,
Russia has...
They can't get it.
Absolutely. I got to let you go. I can tell you what. Thanks for that call.
Thank you.
No question. But just to follow up on one more point, then we got to go this break. Yeah, of course. Syria is very close to Russia. It's less than 1,000 miles from the Caspian Sea, those missiles that they're sending over from the Caspian Sea, the water to land missiles. But the other problem is, look at all the difficulties Russia is having with Islam on their borders, on their southern border. And this is only going to aggravate it. So it's terrible. I mean, it's just a terrible mistake on his part. But, you know, look, if they want to fight ISIS, I don't think we should stop them. We certainly shouldn't be trying to enforce a no-fly zone where we'll be shooting planes out of the sky. That's insane. All right, 844-4-HELGY, 844-367-4254. I'll tell you what, let's make this a shorter break, and we're going to come back. We'll have Jeremy, and we'll get his take on the big debate last night.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News, a production of Diversified Media Enterprises. I'm Doug Cunningham. The International Association of Machinists is using technology and a National Labor Relations Board ruling to allow Boeing workers in South Carolina to sign union cards digitally at home. IAM spokesman Frank Larkin.
Digital technology is advanced to the point where it's so common, it's legal in both banking and legal documents, and there's no reason it shouldn't be legal and valid for the purpose of organizing. If there is any type of harassment or oversight when employees are considering whether or not to sign a union card, it gives them the security and the privacy to do it without worrying about that.
The IAM contends that Boeing moved work to the South Carolina plant to avoid union activity in Washington State. Larkin says Boeing management acknowledged that in part their move was in retaliation for union activity in the Northwest. A union election at the South Carolina plant was scheduled for April, but the IAM withdrew from it, citing a corporate misinformation campaign and outside political interference. But Larkin says the organizing effort continues in South Carolina.
It's not unusual for a union organizing campaign to go through several election cycles before they achieve collective bargaining. The Boeing campaign in South Carolina obviously has a lot of components to it, including the opposition to it. So it's a learning process all the way around. But ultimately, many of the workers there expect they will have a union contract.
James Otto is a California attorney representing Disney workers he says were fired so they could be replaced by low-paid foreign workers. He says Disney fired over 700 competent U.S. workers in Florida, Anaheim, and Burbank, California, and in New York. Disney required them to train their foreign imported replacements. Otto says there are companies specializing in using worker visas to import low-paid foreign workers to displace American workers. He says that is illegal discrimination.
I am using the civil rights law of both the federal government and the state of California. To discriminate against anybody based on certain categories is illegal. It's a crime. What these importers, these body shops are doing, and what the U.S. employer is doing is intentionally excluding, is discriminating against U.S. workers. They're excluding them from the job market.
Otto says in 2014 alone, 9.9 million foreign workers were brought into the U.S. to take American jobs, often at lower wages.
Workers Independent News is brought to you by the American Federation of Teachers and its 1.6 million members working to reclaim the promise of public education, health care, and public services for our students, their families, and our communities. More information online at aft.org.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
All right, back on the Hal Ginsberg Morning Show. Thank you very much, Labor Radio. Let's get right to Jeremy Holden. Jeremy, so glad to have you on to discuss last night's debate. I got some of your tweets. I guess you probably got mine as well. And I'm not going to, you know, lard this question with my views. I just want your immediate takeaways from last night's Democratic debate.
Well, I think Hillary Clinton has shown that this is not her first rodeo. She's been on a presidential debate since I think they had 18 last time around. So I think that practice, if you will, showed. I think she showed that she's a good candidate. I thought Bernie Sanders had some really great moments in the debate last night. I don't think that this changes much in terms of positioning. We'll see when the first polls come out later this week, maybe early next week. We'll see if there's much movement. I don't suspect there is. And I think this raises some interesting questions about what Joe Biden does. I'll be interested to see, you know, if he makes a decision late this week, maybe sometime early next week, what is that decision? Was he moved in any way by what he saw last?
Really interesting takes, Jeremy. I agree with your first part of your analysis. I think they were pretty evenly matched. I don't think there was in any way a knockout or even a TKO. Both had good moments. I don't think either had too many weak moments either when we're talking about the two front runners. And let's be real clear. There is a clear front runner, and that's Hillary Clinton. I don't think this changes that dynamic. If anything, Jeremy, and I'm disappointed a little bit because, you know, I'm a Sanders guy, I think this helps her perhaps more even than it helps him, even though I think they were pretty even. I think it helps her because I think she was the one who could have been hurt by this debate. There's been a little bit of erosion of support. People who may have, generally been in her camp leaning towards Biden, you mentioned him. I think some of those come home to Clinton. I don't know how Bernie may or may not have expanded his base. Maybe a little bit. Maybe some people saw him for the first time, like what they saw. I think, if anything, we might see a slight increase in her already significant lead. But I agree with your general point. They both were good. They both were effective. Regarding Biden, I think he may decide it's not worth getting involved. I don't know how he would be viewed as anything but a very, very much of a Johnny-come-lately at this point.
Well, and again, I think if you're right, and I think you may be, if she does kind of shore up some of that support that was kind of kicking the tires to see if Biden, maybe Biden, right? But the polling questions asked, you know, if they include Joe Biden, that's where you start to see some of her support come down a little bit. If she can lock some more of that down after the performance last night, then, yeah, I think you're right. That does make Sanders' challenge slightly greater than it was. But by and large, I don't see this as a game-changing debate moment. I will say it was very substantive, and I think that's a good thing. You know, we were talking about pay family leave. We were talking about climate change. And the starting point in a Democratic debate on climate change is that science is real. So I think that's a good thing as well.
Well, there was talk about Black Lives Matter. There was talk about Syria and, you know, somewhat detailed responses to what we should do about, you know, what's going on, the chaos in the Levant, if you want to use the ISIL term, Islamic State in the Levant, so Syria and obviously West Iraq, Turkey. So that was, I thought, very substantive. Do you, you know, I watched that debate. It was a long debate. It went on and on. I think it was too long, to be honest with you. But I got two contradictory responses. One, I got an awful lot out of it. I don't need to see a lot more of them. But on the other hand, it was, as you said, substantive. Hillary Clinton especially, I thought, did a very good job on several occasions turning against the Republicans, drawing that sharp distinction between the serious, intelligent policy conversation, discussion on stage versus the clown car on the right. I thought she did that very well. So I'm thinking, on the one hand, this does showcase the Democrats well, and it's in their interest to have more debates. At the same time, I don't really need more. I got a lot out of this one. Your reaction to that?
Yeah, well, I mean, the political junkie in me wants more debates. I want more Republican debates. I want more Democratic debates because I find them enjoyable. They're entertaining. I think the reality is that there's very little evidence that debates move the needle very much in terms of helping people decide who to vote for. There's some confirmation bias. Hillary Clinton supporters go into a debate. They don't always say, boy, I really like Hillary. Bernie Sanders supporters go into the debate. They decide, boy, I really like Bernie Sanders. And I think you touched on something important for a lot of people tuning in last night. It might have been their first chance to really kind of see Bernie Sanders, to see Martin O'Malley, people outside of New Hampshire and Iowa anyway. So maybe there's some slight marginal change, but I don't know that more debate or really going to change the dynamic all that significantly. So I think I'm in the minority with a lot of my political friends. I'm not too upset that there's only six Democratic primary debates. But that being said, if they decided to schedule a few more, I would certainly tune in and enjoy it.
Friend of Hal's, Jeremy Holden, with us. Of course, he was with Media Matters for many years, and we got to know him through his work there, his fine work at Media Matters, now joining me as a friend of Hal, kind of a freelancer on other programs as well. Jeremy with us. By the way, the audio not perfect with Jeremy, but I can understand him. You should be hearing him about as well as I do. So unless it gets really bad, we'll just keep him, and I'll try to transliterate if there's problems understanding Jeremy on the Hal Ginsberg Morning Show. Again, we're talking the Democratic debate. Jeremy, you and I, it seems, both saw that debate as pretty much of a wash between the two candidates. If anything, I think on points, I'd give the debate to Bernie slightly, but maybe the edge in terms of coming out of it with a more significant advantage than she already had to Hillary. But basically, again, a toss-up, and we'll find out when we read the polls. But the punditocracy has declared her the winner by knockout. MSNBC saying she killed it, CNN saying, you know, it was a great night for her, the same with the New York Times. Her performance, according to the Times, was so commanding that even her greatest vulnerability, the email problem that she's been facing in the media, redounded to her benefit. Are they overdoing it? I mean, because I really think they are. And can you explain that as a longtime media watcher, if you agree?
I think that, you know, as a front runner and as a formidable front runner, I don't know that Hillary Clinton needed to do much to be perceived as kind of a knockout winner. Remember, everybody else, in increasing amounts, right? I mean, Martin O'Malley clearly needed to have like a big moment, like a kind of a big headline grabbing moment. Bernie Sanders to a lesser extent, but you know, everybody who's kind of challenging the formidable frontrunner needs to do more. So, I mean, I think even holding court in this case, which, you know, I think you're laying out a view that Hillary Clinton kind of held court. She didn't get knocked down.
I think better than that. I think better. I mean, I think, like you, she was very good, very presidential. I'm balanced, but you said confirmation bias. I probably am looking for ways to see Bernie edging her out. I think the two focus groups I saw, people that just, run-of-the-mill folks who were taken into a room and asked, they gave the debate to Bernie. That's my sense. But certainly, I don't want to, and again, I'm not a fan of Mrs. Clinton. I thought she was very good. You know, that's the best. I give her a B+. Here's my grade, A-minus Sanders, B+ Clinton. I just am making the point. I think the media is giving her the A and giving him the B, and I think that's too big a. That's not defensible grading at this point.
I don't have a problem with that grading. Again, I thought both candidates performed well. I think both candidates kind of performed to largely what the expectations were going in. They kind of fit the roles that the media laid out for them. I'm not surprised to see the media kind of giving the nod to Hillary Clinton because, again, what you're trying to do is secure or grab a formidable lead. And I think coming out of this debate, as you and I discussed, Hillary Clinton either solidified the lead that she has or potentially increased it a little bit. And if that's the ultimate goal, then it's difficult to not kind of come out of this and declare her the overall winner. I think that's kind of the media perspective on why they're looking at it the way that they are. I think they're seeing that the likelihood is that her polling lead is either going to stay steady or increase, and therefore she achieved what she's trying to set out coming out of that debate.
All right, we've got Jeremy with us, Jeremy Holden, friend of Hal, Jeremy Holden on the Hal Ginsberg Morning Show. I want to see if I can get this audio for you. Jeremy, many people saying the big moment of the night was when Bernie said, enough with the damn emails, and I'll see if I can get that audio for you. Is that what you saw as well? This was kind of the showstopper?
I do, and I think that we've had a long summer that's extended well into October, focusing on this ridiculous ginned up email scandal. We can go into why I call it ridiculous, but I think Bernie Sanders is right. I don't think voters largely care about this ridiculous.
Go ahead. No, go ahead. I'm just...
I don't think voters care about this issue. And I think that, again, the media takes signals from these debates. And I think that we were going to come, Kevin McCarthy, who's angling to become the next Speaker of the House, had this moment of candor a week or so ago. He was on Fox News and said that, basically acknowledged that the Benghazi committee, which was where this email issue came from, was this big charade to bring down Hillary Clinton, right? To bring down her polling numbers. And so I think the media kind of heard that and took their signal oh, it's time to stop taking this so seriously. And I think Bernie Sanders just kind of furthered that. Nobody cares about the email. Nobody cares about the stupid Benghazi committee. We care about wealth inequality. We care about paid family. We care about college education. We care about ISIS. These are the issues that we're discussing. Climate change, for crying out loud. We had a substantive debate about climate change, last night. So I do think that was potentially a showstopper to kind of tell the media it's time to move on. It's time to stop trying to create
scandals out of nothing and start talking about the major issues that matter to voters.
All right, let me play this clip because I have a question I want to ask specifically regarding what Bernie Sanders said here. So let's play it for the listeners.
Let me say something that may not be great politics, but I think the Secretary is right. And that is that the American people are sick and tired of hearing about your damn emails.
Thank you.
You know, the middle class, Anderson, and let me say something about the media as well.
All right, and let me just stop it there because he's going to go after the media there. That's not where I wanted to go with this. He said, let me say something that may not be smart politics. Is he right? Was it not smart politics for him to say that?
I think that, you know, as a challenger, there's an incentive there for him to try and kind of take down the candidate ahead of him, right? To take down the front runner. And one way to do that is to feed into kind of the scandal mongering that's happening in the media. Now, what makes it an interesting question is that he's running in a Democratic primary debate. And so that type of going after another candidate with that type of like smear campaign might not play very well. But I think it was a courageous position for him to take to try and push the media off this story that, you know, indirectly could support him. I'm not sure I do think it was brave politically for him to say what he said.
But it may have helped her more than it helped him. So then based on your metric, which is she won the debate, if she gets a little bit of a bump in the polls, then it was a mistake if this helps her more than helps him, though, based on the metric you laid out earlier.
Yeah, I think so. I think that's right.
Jeremy with us on the Hal Ginsberg Morning Show. Were there any – well, I wanted to get some to maybe mistakes, gaffes by either candidate or any of the candidates. But what about Anderson Cooper? Were you impressed with him as a moderator?
I was. I have a pretty low bar when it comes to being impressed by debate moderators. But I thought Anderson Cooper held his own. I thought he challenged candidates when he felt like they weren't answering his questions. I think that's effective. I can't recall a question that he asked that I thought was based on any type of faulty pretense. We did discuss Benghazi, we did discuss the emails, those are issues that are in the news, unfortunately, and I thought the candidates handled them well. So by and large, I thought Anderson Cooper deported himself fine.
Did anybody, you know, make any kind of really serious gaffe?
I don't know about serious gaffes. I think that, you know, Senator Webb, former Senator Jim Webb, kind of begging for attention at one point, doesn't look very presidential. I don't think he had a very good debate night overall, and that's the moment that kind of jumped out to me. And I think former Rhode Island Senator Lincoln Chafee kind of citing the fact, well, I was just appointed to the Senate, like that type of giving an excuse for a vote that he wished he hadn't made. I don't think that was very presidential. I really think that Chafee and Webb showed why they're polling in the basement, why they're really kind of struggling to gain any type of support in the Democratic Party. And those, I think, are just two moments that kind of really illustrate the serious challenges both of those faced.
They were both overwhelmed. They were all three overwhelmed. I mean, Sanders, it was clearly the Sanders-Clinton show. There's no question about it, the Clinton-Sanders show, if you'd prefer to call it that. And in that way, I think Bernie's helped because maybe if people view this as just a choice between the two of them, that gives him a little bit of a boost. He looks more like he's ready for prime time. So, we'll have to look at the polls. But, again, I think we're both agreeing on the general trajectory. Let me throw out possible weak areas for both candidates with respect to the gun issue, which I think came up first. Bernie, I don't think he did himself any favors. I don't know how he could have. I mean, he voted against the Brady bill. And, you know, he raised several times he's from a rural state. I don't know how he could have done better, but it's still a problem area for him. Is it not, Jeremy?
Well, it is, and it just shows how his position put him outside of where the Democratic Party is on this issue. I don't know that that's a game-ending position for him, but it's something that he –
I was surprised he wasn't more prepared to kind of answer that question and put it away. I think that was one of the few strong moments for former Maryland Governor Martin O'Malley last night, where he was kind of able to say, you know, have you ever been to the Eastern Shore of Maryland? Have you ever been to Western Maryland? We were able to get this done by building a consensus that kept our rural communities, you know, at the table. I thought that was a good moment for Martin O'Malley. I just don't think he had enough of them. But yeah, I think that the gun issue is one that is because of how it was handled last night, it's going to linger in the Sanders camp going forward.
What about Clinton's vote to authorize the use of force against Iraq? I think she did about as well as she could. Maybe she finessed better than Clinton than Sanders did on the guns, but it's still out there. I mean, Sanders made the point very strongly. This was the worst foreign policy mistake in American history. And I'll be, you know, my take on that is she did not put this to bed either. And I don't know how she could.
Yeah, I think we'll see on that. I mean, you know, that old adage, time heals all wounds, I think is something that the Clinton camp might be leaning on this one. It was a long time ago. She's written about it. She's talked about the vote, about her regret about that vote. And it seems like her surrogates were out yesterday testing this line in media circles. She brought it out last night, this idea that, you know, Barack Obama made that an issue in 2008, and he still handed a big chunk of his foreign policy portfolio to her. Whether that inoculates her, whether that plus time inoculates her from that issue, I think remains to be seen. I don't sense that the Iraq war vote is a policy issue that's at the forefront of voters' minds now as it was in 2008, but that could change. So we'll just
Why I think it's a little bit relevant. Just as the gun issue is relevant because of the gun violence that we're still facing, so the Iraq vote is relevant. Not just because the fallout from the disastrous adventure in Iraq continues, but because the next president will clearly have to make decisions on whether to use force and how to implement and how to utilize it in the Middle East. As we see right now, the continuing hostilities in Syria, for example, and Iraq, and the tension with Iran. So given that, doesn't her hawkish stance and her continuing relative hawkishness compared to the other Democratic candidates, doesn't that continue to be an issue, Jeremy?
Well, it could, but I think if you look at polling and asking voters what issues matter to you most, you know, I'll go back to 1992 to steal the line, it's the economy. And so we're not running the 2008 election, which, you know, up until the financial crisis was largely a foreign policy election. I'm not seeing that in the polling right now. That could change. Obviously, there are still serious national security issues centered in the Middle East. I agree with you. Those are, by and large, connected to the disastrous votes to authorize use of force in Iraq back in 2002. That's just not the election that we're having right now. So I think the Clinton camp probably feels pretty comfortable and inoculated from that vote right now. But again, a lot can change between now and February.
My friend of Hal, Jeremy Holden, with us on the morning show. Clinton, I think, did a real nice job in response to the question about her, you know, changing positions on various issues. Do you believe she really has evolved, or do you think she is simply responding to political winds? And when she is in the general election, obviously everyone moves to the center when they're in a general election, but will she forcibly move right back to where she was, the center moderate she claimed to be when she was in Columbus in August? And if she wins the White House, will she govern, you know, as a center moderate or as a progressive? Do you have any sense on that, Jeremy?
Yeah, I don't have an issue with her explanation of, you know, saying, like, I'm a proud progressive, but I'm also a proud progressive who knows how to get things
done.
Yeah, that's right. And I think that politicians get a bad rap for compromise. and you know look at some of the where conservative movement is right now, and their complete unwillingness to compromise. That's not a good look. And so, as progressives, I'm okay saying I'm not going to get everything right now. Who's the strongest candidate to move the ball forward?
I think that's a great answer, and I am cautiously optimistic that Clinton is really playing a long game, trying to move us to the left as best she can. But I guess in terms of specifics, here's my concern. She says now she's against the TPP. Would she find, if she's elected, some reason to sign off on it if it's presented to her after she takes office? Would she find some reason to ultimately approve Keystone? Or do you think her statements today are strong enough that she, or that she, you know, she's pretty clear. She really doesn't like the big banks. She does think they need to be taken down a few pegs. Do you think she really would pursue those if she takes office? I don't know the answer. I'm not trying to put you on the spot, but I'm being very specific here because she's been specific, and I like the specificity, but I wonder if I can trust her.
Well, I think she'll pursue, I do take her at her word that she will pursue those goals. I also think she's well positioned in terms of her political background to recognize that the House is going to be Republican for the next 5-6 years. And, you know, until we get to redraw congressional districts in a saner way after the 2000 election and we get the census numbers, the gerrymandering that Republicans did in 2010 is going to keep the House in their control for the rest of the decade. That creates some serious challenges in terms of public policy making. And so, yes, I do think that Hillary Clinton, if she were president, would probably compromise. And I think some of the final outcomes are probably going to be things that I'm not 100% in love with and might look slightly different from what she's laying out on the campaign trail. I just don't think that that's about some nasty political expediency, putting your finger up to the wind. I think it's about trying to get the best outcome that you can get given the current
system. Let's say it's really, really important to me that we don't have the TPP, that this is a really, really big deal. I don't want a president who's going to sign the TPP. Should I feel comfortable that Hillary Clinton will not sign the TPP?
I do. I do. I was fine with her explanation last night. I found it totally believable that she thought, largely looking at the grand framework, we should have a trade pact with the Asian Pacific Rim. That's a good policy to pursue. And then when she saw the details of the negotiations and the final trade deal earlier this week, last week, she said, no, this doesn't meet my expectations. I think that is a perfectly reasonable explanation for how her position seems to have changed. She got new information.
Didn't really change. Her point is, hey, I wanted these protections for when it comes to, you know, pharmaceuticals to protect consumers. I wanted protections against the currency manipulations. Those weren't in it. I always said I did. They're not there. So therefore, I'm where I was from the beginning. And I think I agree. I think those are legitimate answers, explanations. I'm not as confident as you are, Jeremy, but I certainly feel better. I will say that. I think that was one of her, wins last night, is that I think those of us who are even perhaps further to left than you are on some issues may feel more comfortable with her. All right, final question before we have to move. Both of us agreeing that to the extent Sanders and Clinton showed weakness, it was by being too conservative for the Democratic electorate on certain issues, guns with respect to Bernie, and either hawkishness, military hawkishness, and military hawkishness for Clinton. I won't say economics. She was strongly progressive. So those two issues might hurt them in the Democratic primary, but will make them more, palatable for many conservatives. So isn't that a reason, if there's none other, to have more debates? Because our candidates, when conservatives see them, may not be as frightening as they're portrayed by Fox.
Yeah, I just haven't been convinced that more debates are really helpful, you know, are really helpful for voters or helpful for most candidates. I mean,
you know, what is there to lead me to believe that Martin O'Malley, if there's 5 more, 6 more, 7 more, 8 more debates, that he's just going to get so much better at this?
No, but that's not my point. I don't think we'd learn more, you or me would, but what about just making these candidates that we both agree, and let's just look to the top two, making these candidates, and if Biden were involved, him too, making them seem more what they exactly are to conservative and moderate to conservative voters, mainstream politicians whose views are broadly consistent with, I think, a consensus about how our country should work. That the debates, they might not help Democrats much choose. We've already kind of made up our mind, and this didn't really change anything much. But they'll help the country feel more comfortable with either of the choices when they're ultimately nominated in the general election.
I just haven't seen the evidence that debates matter that much. You know, I'll keep looking for it, but at this point, I just have to.
Do you think though that President Obama, that Barack Obama was pretty well known because he had that gauntlet he had to run through back in 2008 with all those 20-plus debates? I mean, I don't know this, but I think it may have helped him with get some crossover votes.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, you know, the most watched debates get about 3 million people tuning in, and you need a lot more than 50% of those 3 million people turning out to vote. So I think, you know, voter turnout, the Obama machine that registered voters, that reached out to voters, that mobilized caucus goers, I think that type of grassroots organizing matters a lot more, and I think if I were running a campaign, I would want to focus much more of my energy on that than on debate prep.
All right, Jeremy, that was great. Thank you so much for your time. I've already kept you too long. I really appreciate it. I do have you penciled in for this Monday regular time. Can you still make it?
Absolutely. Right, wouldn't miss it.
We'll speak to you then. Great content, great analysis. Jeremy Holden, friend of Hal on The Morning Show. And I will post the entire interview, of course, at my archive section. All right, we're going to go to a quick break here. Let's do Media Matters. I really enjoyed his analysis. We do have, by the way, Rich Rubino coming on in about a half hour, so we'll get his take on the debate as well. You're listening again, Hal Ginsberg, Morning Show. And I want to thank, as I do every show, because, you know, I thank them so much, my good friend Solar Czar and Radio Monterey, RadioMonterey.com, for their support and for making me the morning show host on Radio Monterey. RadioMonterey.com is the home, your home, for programming shows for the open mind.
This is the Media Matters Minute. I'm Eric Wusewal. On CNN's State of the Union, correspondent Jake Tapper interviewed Bradley Podlyska, a former staff member on the House Select Committee on Benghazi, who claims that the panel's work and focus has shifted. Here's Tapper.
This man says that committee's mission has changed and is now focused solely on how to put blame on former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, which the committee's Republican chairman, Trey Gowdy, has repeatedly denied.
This has become a partisan investigation. I do not know the reason for the hyperfocus on Hillary Clinton.
Following the interview, CNN.com noted that Chairman Gowdy, quote, criticized CNN's reporting of Podlyska's claims and complained that the network did not contact the Benghazi committee prior to the interview. CNN responded in a statement saying, quote, we categorically deny Benghazi committee Chairman Trey Gowdy's statement about CNN, and quote, Chairman Gowdy was invited to discuss this on CNN and declined. Chairman Gowdy is wrong. For more on this and other stories, please visit MediaMatters.org.
All right, let me give you the numbers here from Wall Street. We'll start with this Dow, as we always do. I saw it was up a second ago. Now down, 27 points down to 17,055. NASDAQ down 13 to 4,784. S&P 500 is down 4 to 2,000 exactly. Gold's up 11 an ounce. 211.76, and oil will be priced at $46.28, or it was about 30 seconds ago whenever they post, whenever these numbers are. I don't know how big a delay there is. So, it's down. It's down a little bit. All right, 844-4-HAL-G if you want to join me. 844-367-4254 is the phone number. So I'm looking forward to speaking to you of your take on the debates, your thoughts, who did well, who did not. And what will be the likely upshot. I do think Jeremy's points were all very good. You know, he's outstanding analysis. Here's where I think I really do differ with him, and he probably got a sense of this. I think the Democrats are making a terrible mistake not having more debates. And I understand, you know, from my perspective, I saw enough. I mean, I don't need to see any debates. I already know who I'm going to vote for. I was going to vote for Bernie Sanders before that debate. I'll vote for him after it. But you know what? It was in a way helpful. I'm not a Clinton supporter. You know, I don't think much of her. I don't think she's been very honest with us. And I think she's a corporatist and a militarist. But she has moved to the left, and I accept that. I don't know that she's moved as far as she presents herself as having moved, but I think she has. And I'm pleased. That's good. I take National Carl's point very seriously when he says, well, even if she really in her heart is what she always was, kind of center moderate, the country has moved, at least her party has, and she's moved with it, and she's going to have to. And I think that's a fair point. I agree with it. I accept it. Or I'm persuaded by it. Let's put it that way. I'm persuaded halfway by it. So that's good for the Democrats. That's good for Clinton, because it means that I'll be less grudging in my support for her. I'll come on this program and I'll say, you know, you got to vote for Clinton. You got to support her. She's better. I'll be saying that aggressively, more with more conviction than I might have otherwise felt, in part because of the way she's performed in these debates, in this debate, and perhaps future ones. I don't agree with Jeremy that familiarity with the candidates doesn't necessarily help them. I think it will help. So I think he's wrong there. I think that the Debbie Wasserman Schultz made a mistake. And Hillary Clinton herself, by, you know, being flatly opposed to a lot of debates, I think that was a very significant strategic error. Tactically, it may have been the wise move. If the tactic is to win the Democratic primary, you know, fight for the nomination, then yeah, okay, it was a good move. It was a good move, I guess. But strategically, she's keeping much of the country from seeing her as much as they can, and presumably getting to like her a little bit better. Let's go to Los Angeles. Hey, Julius, thank you for calling in. You let me know I wasn't on the air. I really appreciate that. Thank you. Good morning.
Obama, he's too stupid to play checkers, let alone chess, let alone three-dimensional chess.
He's not stupid. Come on. You know, Julius, sometimes you're not.
He's an idiot.
Come on. I'll give you one more bite at the apple. What do you want to talk about besides...
Bernie was a real punk, man.
It was
embarrassing.
Like? What did you not like? There were areas where I wasn't happy either. Go ahead. What didn't you like?
The way he kissed Hillary's butt. He should have said, when I'm president, I'm going to put you in jail. You're a war criminal.
All right. Well, you know, that's what a lot of people on the left want to hear, but that won't get him president. That won't get him elected president. It will not.
Wasn't it obscene to see her up there on the debate stage? I mean, it wasn't like a small mistake.
Yeah.
I mean, thousands of people
that was
murdered.
Have
you seen their faces? Why is there no war memorial with all their faces there? It should say these are the people murdered by Hillary and Bush and Cheney. You know, the Cheneys are considered one of the 50 most influential families of today. Is that a joke?
I'm sure it's true. Why would that be a joke? I believe it.
They're a joke. Cheney's a joke. His idiot daughter's a joke.
It's awful, but I think it's true. It's awful,
well,
but it's true.
Well, you know what? Yeah, you make a good point. It is true. That's how messed up things
That's
are.
That's right. I mean, it's true. I thought Bernie did about as well as he could with the Iraq situation. He did kind of give her a little bit of an out now with the emails.
That was a good punch, you know, but he didn't follow up. He had her on the ropes.
Lincoln Chafee made the point, and Bernie followed up, that they saw the same intelligence she did, and they didn't buy it. I thought that was pretty strong.
You know, he cut her bad, man. He should have worked that cut, you know. He should have made her bleed like Wapner fighting Ali, you know.
I don't know. I think it was the other way around, but okay. Hey, Julius, thanks for the call. I appreciate that. It's Julius in Los Angeles. Where did I think Bernie was a little bit weak? Well, let's just go right here. Let's just start right here.
Today, we're going to start with guns. The shooting in Oregon earlier this month. Once again, it brought the issue of guns into the national conversation. Over the last week, guns have been the most discussed political topic on Facebook by 2-1. Senator Sanders, you voted against the Brady Bill, mandated background checks and a waiting period. You also supported allowing riders to bring guns in checked bags on Amtrak trains. For a decade, you said that holding gun manufacturers legally responsible for mass shootings is a bad idea. Now you say you're reconsidering that. Which is it? Shield the gun companies from lawsuits or not?
Let's begin, Anderson, by understanding that Bernie Sanders has a D-minus voting record from the NRA.
All right, let me stop it. You know, the Bernie Sanders thing, you know, he's talking about himself in the third person. I'm okay with that. That doesn't bother me. I know some people say, you know, you talk about yourself in the third person is a little weird. Like I say, well, you know, Hal's a really good radio host. I can just say I'm a good radio host. I don't need to say Hal is. I think it was okay. It didn't bother me. He did that twice. I got some tweets about that. It was a little – you took notice. No big deal. No big deal there. The D-minus voting record, you know, look, if you don't vote every single time the way they want, you got an F, you're going to get a D-minus or an F. So that doesn't do much for me. The D-minus, let's look at the specific votes. It's like when people say Hillary's really a liberal. Well, except when it comes to the wars, except when it comes to the banks, except when it comes to campaign finance reform. So I don't give a lot of credence to the D-minus. Look, he should have voted for the Brady Bill. There's no way around it. He should have voted for the Jim Brady bill, the background check law. And we have seen gun crimes go down since that law was put in place, I believe in 94. Now, here is why he didn't vote for it, because he had the backing of the NRA. At that time, they helped him win his race for Congress. There's a clear timeline there. This is Sanders' great weakness. But I think in another way, and he can't say this, but I will, it's his strength. He's a guy who's so in favor of campaign finance reform. Let's take these special interest groups out of the election system. Well, you know, he got elected by a right-wing special interest group. And was it 88? Was this when he won the Congress, I think? I think it was. So this problem that Bernie Sanders has, that he has been too reticent in combating and standing up to the gun lobby, he would actually solve that problem because he would be taking out of the equation corporations and institutions and saying they are not people. They don't get to contribute the way human beings do. And he would put much greater fetters on these kind of extra human, non-human entities that have polluted our election system, our electoral system. That said, I can't defend this. This is a weakness on his part. Because I feel so strongly and support so strongly his message for economic justice and environmental justice, you know, I live with the NRA vote. But it's not ideal. I also live with it because the president can't do much about guns. They can do something. They can't do that much. And I believe if he were president, he would stand up to the NRA. I truly do. All right, 844-4HELG, 844-367-4254. How serious is this NRA situation for Sanders? Does this make it how much does this hurt him? And I'll say this. I think it hurts him a lot. Look, he's got to be just about perfect. He's got to thread a moving needle if he's going to beat Hillary Clinton because she's got the lead. She's got the money. She's got the endorsements. And there is residual affection for her in the Democratic Party. And she also is a good debater. So for him to beat her, he's got to be well nigh perfect. And this is an area where, let's face it, for Democrats, he's not perfect. Not even close.
Let's also understand that back in 1988, when I first ran for the United States Congress, way back then, I told the gun owners of the state of Vermont, and I told the people of the state of Vermont, a state which has virtually no gun control, that I supported a ban on assault weapons. And over the years, I have strongly supported instant background checks, doing away with...
Cool.
And I think we've got to move aggressively at the federal level in dealing with the straw man purchases. Also, I believe, and I've fought for, to understand that there are thousands of people in this country today who are suicidal, who are homicidal.
health care that they need, the mental health care, because they don't have insurance or they're too poor. I believe that everybody in this country has a mental crisis, has got to get mental health counseling immediately.
Do you want to shield gun companies from lawsuits?
Of course not. This was a large and complicated bill. There were provisions in it that I think made sense. For example, do I think that a gun shop in the state of Vermont that sells legally a gun to somebody, and that somebody goes out and does something crazy, that gun shop owner should be held responsible? I don't. On the other hand, where you have manufacturers and where you have gun shops knowingly giving guns to criminals or aiding and abetting that, of course we should take action.
Secretary Clinton, is Bernie Sanders tough enough on guns?
No, not at all. I think that we have to look at the fact that we lose 90 people a day from gun violence. This has gone on too long, and it's time the entire country stood up against the NRA.
All right, I'm going to stop it there. She's better. She's better on that issue. And there's no question. She is. She's not better on a lot of issues than Sanders. That may be the only one. I would say that is the only one. By the way, one issue. I thought, yes, Cooper did a good job. Didn't mention this to Jeremy. Didn't bring it up. Didn't think about it. Why was there no talk? Was there talk? I didn't hear it. Why was there no talk about campaign finance reform? I mean, that's a huge issue for Sanders, right? He supports the constitutional amendment. Why isn't there, wasn't there questions about it? I think that that's an area, obviously, that Sanders kills it, kicks it. Why wasn't that brought up by Anderson Cooper? Was it in the last segment? I know they talked about marijuana legalization, but that was not discussed, and I think it should have been, and I think it would have helped. All right, 844-4-HELG, 844-367-4254. Some comments and some emails I want to get to right now. They're directly on point. So let's go to Shade's comments during he was posting. I was tweeting, hey, Shade, if you don't follow me on Twitter, follow me on Twitter, and, of course, I'll follow you as well. And then we can tweet each other, and our followers will see those tweets. From Shade, Bernie did well, though. It remains to be seen if he did well enough to erode HRC's lead. And so I agree with that. There's more to the tweet. If you want to read these in full, I'm not going to read all of them because some of them aren't directly pertinent to the debate. By Shade, but his comments are always good, they're always on point, or at least they're always very interesting. They may be on a different point. This is what's on point with regard to the debate. That's how I see it, too. He did well, but I don't know if he did well enough to row the lead. Regardless of what Bernie said about HRC's email, what concerns me most is what is going to be leaked just weeks before the general election. The FBI says they've recovered virtually HRC's entire server. I suspect major damage could occur. And then he goes on to point out that if there was stuff about the Clinton Global Initiative and fundraising, maybe some kinds of conflicts of interest, which I talked about quite a bit at length yesterday, especially involving her top two, Huma Abedin and Cheryl Mills. Yes, I think there are big problems there. There were big conflicts of interest with both her special advisor, Huma, and her chief of staff, Cheryl Mills, both of whom were receiving outside compensation while working at the State Department. I don't think that's acceptable. And the compensation, it wasn't from like some totally unrelated work that had nothing to do with international affairs, which is what State Department is responsible for. Instead, Huma Abedin was working for the Clinton Global Initiative while she was at State, and Cheryl Mills, while she was the chief of staff for Hillary Rodham Clinton, was also negotiating NYU's move to have a campus at Abu Dhabi. So I don't see how there isn't a real serious issue there. That could be problematic for Clinton down the road. It should be. It's a problem. It wasn't brought up during the debate. Probably it should have been. By the way, that would have been one of the advantages to more debates, because there were topics that didn't come up that we really need to hear the conversation about. The campaign finance reform and also these issues involving conflicts of interest. I think they're big. Okay, this is from Shade. I think Bernie's answer regarding his conscientious objectives, he was a conscientious objector status during the Vietnam War would hurt him in the general election. He says, Shade, seriously, Bernie said he did it because he was against the Vietnam War, but my understanding is that you couldn't claim this unless you were against all war. I don't know the whole deal. Interesting point, Shade. I think that's kind of probably off the map. I don't think too many people, just so it's really long ago, it's 50 plus years ago, maybe Republicans will try to gin up anger and opposition to Bernie because of it. I don't think that's going to be a problem for him. I really don't. Look, Clinton didn't serve, right? He never served in Vietnam, and he was elected president 20 plus years ago. 5 deferments for Cheney. W had that, got into the Texas Air Guard through connection, so he wouldn't have to go to Vietnam. So I honestly don't think this is going to be an issue. But I hear your concern. I don't think it's a big deal. And I thought also, by the way, on that point, Jim Webb distinguished himself well, where he said, I'm not going to say he can't be president because he was a CO. No, not at all. That was a fine moment for Jim Webb. From Dennis in Columbus. Hal, I wasn't able to watch the debate. I'm a Martin O'Malley supporter. How do you think he did? Honestly, not very well. I haven't spoken about Martin O'Malley. He was pretty much colorless. He just didn't stand out in any way. The fireworks were all between Sanders and Clinton. I did not find Martin O'Malley in any way to distinguish himself, so I don't think he did well. I also thought that he was unable, and I don't think there's a good answer to the question, unable to answer, but there isn't a good one, to the question that Anderson Cooper posed, which was, hey, what about all your, aggressive policing when you were mayor of Baltimore? You're talking now about Black Lives Matter. You talk now about mass incarceration as though it's a problem. But when you were mayor, you vigorously pursued these exact policies that you now criticize. And I don't think O'Malley had any good answer to that. Not that there is one, but I guess the best is, hey, I've evolved. It was a different time. Crime was very high. People were afraid. That was how we were elected. But you know what? It turns out it was a mistake the way we handled it. That's probably the best thing you could say. He didn't say it that way. I did not find him to be a compelling presence. Of the three non-headliners, right? I guess that's the best way to put it. I really was most impressed with Lincoln Chafee. He's not a strong speaker. He doesn't raise his voice and shout the way Bernie. And by the way, Hillary was loud too. People were complaining that Bernie was too loud. I thought Hillary was pretty loud too. I was in a room where the TVs were way, way too high. They were too loud. So they all sounded like they were shouting. Bernie was talking the loudest. Hillary was also talking loudly. And both were speaking very rapidly. They had so much they wanted to get out. They might have benefited from slowing down a little bit. At some points, Sanders did that. And he also tried to modulate his voice, but as he spoke, he got louder and louder, and he started to shout. So I would say neither one had perfect technique, but they were good. Look, they were good. I think they clearly stood out. I don't think Martin O'Malley did in any way. I thought Lincoln Chafee had some pretty interesting answers. I thought he was very good when he was talking about the problems with the Clinton email. In terms of, it was a good topic for him. He should have brought it up. He should have said, yes, I have a problem with it. But he didn't effectively, I think, point out the major issue, which is simply she did not preserve her emails as she was mandated to do. I think that was I wish he had done that. I wish he had just said flat out, the rule required Secretary of State Clinton to preserve her emails at the State Department. She was required to do that. She did not do that. That's the problem. I think if he had said it that way, it would have been better. Would have been more effective. He didn't do that. I like him the best of the bottom three. I like him better than I like her. I mean, if it was Chafee versus Clinton, I would vote for Chafee. If it was O'Malley versus Clinton, I'd have trouble. If it was Webb versus Clinton, I'd probably vote for Clinton. But in terms of economic justice, she's probably the weakest of the candidates, and that's an incredibly important issue for me. So I'm not... she's made a sell to me. I'm slightly less of a cautious buyer if I have to buy, but I'm not happy about it. All right, 844-4-HELL-G, 844-367-4254. One other area where I thought, to be honest with you, Bernie did not hit it out of the park was the Edward Snowden question. And that was where Lincoln Chafee really did hit it out of the park. He said, he should come back here without any, without any prosecution. He should not have to worry about that. I thought that was very, I thought it was powerful. And Bernie couldn't go that far. Bernie could not say there should not be a prosecution. What Bernie said was, well, I think we should take into account that he did a lot of good for our country, and we know about the illegal activities of the NSA. But, yeah, he broke the law. I don't buy that. I don't even think he broke the law. I don't know what law. He broke a law that shouldn't be a law. He broke an immoral law. He broke a law that keeps us from knowing what our government is doing. And we needed to know. So I thought that was a weak moment, to be honest with you, for Bernie. Let's go to the phones. Call you on the show with Hal, the Hal Show. Who's this?
Good morning, Hal. It's John.
Hey, John. Good morning.
Hey, so from what I saw, and I don't know if you mentioned this, but Lincoln Chafee was criticizing Hillary, saying, you know, I don't know how we gain our credibility back around the world, you know, if we're going to elect somebody who supported the Iraq War. That's, I'm paraphrasing, but and then Anderson Cooper turned to Hillary and said, would you like to respond? And she said, no. I mean, I thought that was very arrogant and kind of reeked of entitlement.
Well, you know, I hear that. I, you know what? I didn't think so. And I'll tell you why. Because what's she going to say? I mean, he got her. There's no response. What answer can there be? Bernie had already said this was the biggest foreign policy blunder in American history. Chafee seconded that. How she gave her answer. She gave her not good explanation for it, her unacceptable. There's no answer. There's no good answer. The only answer is I made a political calculation at the time that I'd be better off in the long run supporting the war. I was wrong. I would have been better off opposing it. That's the only answer that's true, and also she's kind of leans towards the military, right? She's a militarist. That's who she is. So how's she gonna? She can't say that. So she's stuck.
Well, I also didn't care much for the fact that people cheered on the answer. I thought at least she owed some sort of response, like maybe, hey, look, I already addressed that, or you know, I already told you. You know, why I voted for the Iraq War and just something, but not you know, a smug answer like that. Just, you know, kind of, no, I'm not going to.
Yeah, I hear you. I agree. It was entitled. There was entitlement there. But again, she, you know, look, she answered the question as best she could, I guess. I don't know what else she was supposed to do. Did you hear anything? Go ahead, and I got a question for you, but go ahead and respond. I didn't know what else you could say.
Now a criticism of Bernie. I, on more than one occasion, he did not answer questions he was asked. He answered different questions, and at one point, Anderson Cooper ran out of time and could not call him out on it and say, you know, please answer the question. He just moved on. Bernie is way too rehearsed. I love his authenticity, but his lines are rehearsed, and I think that he needs to what's the word? He needs to go a little more freestyle, ad lib a little bit. And get away from, you know, he memorizes a lot of statistics, and that's good. I like the information that he gives, but I wish that he could be, I don't know, Hal, jump in and save me here.
I'm listening, but I don't really have you want to be more spontaneous. You want him to be more off the cuff.
Yes.
And you know what my answer to that is? I don't see that. I don't agree with your criticism. I think he was fine. I thought he was fine. I thought he did well. I mean, there were areas where I thought he was weak. I thought he was weak on guns because I think he is weak on guns. It's tough. You know, you can't turn a silk a sow's ear into a silk purse. I think that's the problem. His positions on guns I don't agree with. I think that, and most Democrats don't. And that makes it hard for him. Same with the Iraq War and Clinton. There's not much he can do with it. So, no, I don't want to respond because I got nothing. I mean, that's really what she was saying. So that's... I don't really share those concerns that you raised. on balance, I thought he did a little bit of a better job than she did. I thought it was pretty close. I think it was basically they're still standing. Would I call it a draw? You know, if you forced me to, I might say I'd give him the bout on points, but it was close. I gave him an A minus. I gave her a B plus. I stand by that.
Yeah. The one thing I learned was that I'd never heard Jim Webb speak, and there were a lot of points he made that I like. And then at the end, his view on climate change, forget it. That guy, never.
No, what was he? You know what? I may have missed that. It doesn't stick in my mind at all. What did he say about climate change?
You know, he basically said he acknowledges it exists, but, you know, energy, nuclear energy, coal, well, nuclear's, you know, kind of going off on a tangent, but he did bring it up. He said, you know, coal, these are all realities, and we need to just kind of find a good way to transition. And it led me to believe that that he is, you know, bought and paid for by coal, right? He's from that area, and
well, Virginia, I don't know how big a coal mining state Virginia is. West Virginia is a big coal mining state. There isn't that much coal. Maybe in southwestern Virginia and in, you know, northwestern Virginia. But I don't think it's a big part of the state's economy there. But he may get money from the oil and gas and coal industry. I don't know that. He's a conservadam when it comes to many of these issues. He's really good on the military. But on other issues, he's much weaker. Hey, listen, John, I better let you go, buddy. Thanks for the call. I got a caller calling. Right. I got to take. All the best, buddy. Take care, John. And let's see. I think, is that you, Rich? Do I have you? I was going to call you in just a moment. I apologize for being a little tardy.
Oh, that's okay. Nope, that's me. I'm right here.
Hey, it's been a while. Richard Rubino with us on the Hal Ginsberg Morning Show. Of course, he writes for Huffington Post. He's a one of the columnists there. And, Rich, I invited you because I was getting your tweets last night during the debate. I was tweeting as well, and I wanted your take because I've been talking quite a bit about how I saw some of my listeners chiming in. But, obviously, you have a different eye and are an expert in the area of politics. The general consensus among the punditocracy, Rich, is that Hillary Clinton won, if not by a knockout, then pretty convincingly. Is that your sense as well?
I wouldn't say a knockout. I think she won. I think she won to the degree that nobody really touched her, and that Bernie Sanders essentially took the issue of the email issue essentially off the table for the Democratic primary anyways. I mean, and it's to the benefit in a certain degree to Bernie Sanders because part of his campaign is he's going to be civil and he's not going to run any negative ads. But it's also an issue that he can no longer use against Hillary Clinton now that he said, you know, I'm sick of your damn emails. I thought the real losers were actually, Lincoln Chafee and Jim Webb, because they really needed to do something dramatic to get themselves in the conversation for the next day. And, you know, most of the coverage that I'm seeing for Jim Webb is simply when he kept saying, you know, I need to speak longer. You've let them speak. And Lincoln Chafee, that one real gap he made when they asked him about the Glass-Steagall Act, and he said that, well,
He just came in. He was tired. I was just tired when I came to the, you know, I had just been elected. I was filling my father's spot or something like that. And
it was just an awkward response that he was basically saying he didn't know it was in it. I mean, if you go back, what had actually happened at that time, his father, of course, had been the senator and his father had died and there was a vacancy, and Lincoln Ullman, I believe, who was the governor of Rhode Island at the time, appointed the son to the United States Senate, and that was the first vote that he had. So he had time, you know, he got there, he situated himself in the Senate, so basically he's saying that, you know, as soon as he got there, it was almost like he had to go out and he had to vote, and he just voted yes. It was just a very awkward response. It reminded me almost of Admiral Stockdale in 92 when he said, you know, who am I, why am I here? It was just just very weird.
Rich Rubino with us, Huffington Post comes. It's funny, you bring up Admiral Stockdale there. Of course, he was the Democratic pick for
the pros running mate.
For H. Ross Perot. I almost think that Jim Webb gave off more of a Stockdale vibe. You know, a couple times just sort of standing there very stiffly. He did complain that he wasn't getting enough time, but his answers were often just kind of a little bizarre. He said the enemy he was most proud of having made was the Vietnamese soldier who threw a grenade at him.
Yes.
But of course, he killed, you know, he didn't say it, but of course, he wound up worse off than I did. It was very anomalous, really.
You know, there are two things that really stood out. For one, he talked about how he was Navy Secretary. He mentioned he was Navy Secretary in the administration of Ronald Reagan. I think if you're running in the Democratic debate, if you're going to say you're Navy Secretary, I would just leave it at that. I would not say I'm the Navy Secretary in the administration of Ronald Reagan. I would say, well, why is somebody who was Navy Secretary in the Reagan administration running in the Democratic primary? That was the first thing that stood out. The second thing that stood out was his opening statement where he mentioned what every one of his daughters was doing. You know, one of them was a massage therapist, and the others had a bunch of, you know, what they were jobs, and two of them were still in school, and, you know, we're
one in the military, right? One was in the military, or still
one was in the military. Yeah, and that he mentioned him at the end, but it's almost like you see sometimes in selectmen's races or in very local races when people are introducing themselves that don't really have any political experience, and they're, you know, in their opening statements, they start mentioning what all their kids do, and then people say, you know, well, does this really have much to do with you? I mean, in terms of his son being in the military, that I think was very relevant. Because he was against the Iraq War from the beginning, and if you read, he had a column back in 2002, which really was very pretentious in terms of what could potentially happen in the Iraq War. And he actually had an instance where he never brought it up, but you know, when he got to the Senate in 2007, and there was a reception, you met with George W. Bush. George W. Bush said, how's your boy doing? He said, and then Jim Webb started saying, well, you know, we need to get out of Iraq right now. And then Bush said, My question was, how was your boy doing? Which actually, at the time, got a great reception within the Democratic ranks. He never mentioned that, but he did mention he was in the Reagan administration, which really made no sense in a Democratic primary.
All right, Richard, you're a columnist, I mentioned, at the Huffington Post. Are you going to write about the debates? Are you going to put your reaction, or this debate, are you going to put your reaction to it at Huffington Post so people should look for it?
Most likely, yes.
Okay.
I'll have some sort of an interesting take on it.
All right, so I'll let listeners know, but just keep out an eye for that because you know it's going to be good. You know Richard's going to give you a really interesting take. And you already did give one. You said, hey, it wasn't a knockout. It was kind of a if there was a decision on points for Clinton, it's because she certainly didn't fall flat. And I think you're absolutely right. In fact, I would say she gets a nod if we give a nod because I think she may see a couple of point bump in the polls, if anything, because people who are, you know, concerned, maybe they were leaning towards Joe Biden. At this point, he clearly looks like a Johnny come lately or a Johnny come too late. I think at this point, he cannot be in this now, in my view. And I know you have a thought on that. So she may find some voters.
He's just a regular Joe.
Yeah. She may find some voters coming home to her. I would say when it comes to, you know, grading the debate, I actually thought Bernie was a little more powerful. I think he stood out a little more than she did. She didn't need to though. So I give him the, honestly, my grades are Bernie A minus, Clinton B plus, and then two C's for Chafee and, O'Malley, and then a D for Webb. So that's how I grade it. But I think we see it kind of the same way. Do you think the media, and by the way, push back if we don't, but the media is really championing the dynamic, the notion that she won big. That's the narrative. And maybe
yeah.
She won big by not losing, but that's not how it comes across. You know, Ryan Lizza
yeah.
says that the others were terrible. He says all the others were terrible. The New York Times said she was masterful or some other very, very positive adjective. Are they overstating what we saw last night?
Absolutely. I didn't think Martin O'Malley was terrible at all. I think Martin O'Malley actually got a lot of airtime, a lot more than I expected he would get. Now, Martin O'Malley, I mean, considering he's so low in the polls, he needed to do something absolutely dramatic to get himself into the national conversation, and he probably hasn't done that, and probably, you know, he's going to do some media interviews today, but my guess is he won't get any tomorrow. But I certainly thought that he held his own, certainly with Bernie Sanders, certainly when he talked about gun control, for example, which is the one issue where Hillary and Martin O'Malley can actually get to Bernie Sanders left on, because, you know, Sanders was just a senator from Vermont, and Vermont's a very pro-gun friendly state, so in many respects he was representing constituents on that issue. So I thought that Martin O'Malley did relatively well. I thought that Lincoln Chafee, you know, it's weird. He has kind of an awkward vibe to him. And Jim Webb, I actually thought was going to do pretty well. I mean, I remember in 2007, when he first got to the Senate, I mean, he was a rising star in the party. They had him deliver the Democratic response to President George W. Bush's to his State of the Union, and I mean, usually these speeches, like I remember Bobby Jindal gave it was absolutely awful. He gave a speech that was really, I mean, it was inspiring. He had a picture of his son who was in Iraq. I mean, by 2008, this guy was, a lot of people thought, on Barack Obama's shortlist for vice president. He'd just been elected to the Senate 2 years earlier. That's why I thought it was odd how out of practice he kind of was, in a sense. But I thought that I don't think Martin O'Malley did horrible at all.
Yeah, I was not impressed with O'Malley. I guess we do see that a little bit differently. I just, you know, I use this adjective several times. He came across to me as colorless. He just didn't stand out in any way. And I thought, yes, he does better on guns, but, you know, I think they got to him, Anderson Cooper got to him when it comes to the kind of broken windows or zero tolerance practices he put in place for police when he was mayor. So his, of Baltimore, so his criticism of Bernie on guns, I think, falls a little bit flat. I thought Lincoln Chafee actually came out looking pretty good when he followed up on what Sanders said about the Iraq vote by Clinton, that this was the biggest foreign policy blunder. I thought he came out looking stronger there. But no, honestly, I don't think, to me, Martin O'Malley didn't stand out at all, Rich.
Well, I think, in terms of O'Malley, I think part of where he stood out was not necessarily on substance. I certainly agree with you about the whole open windows thing, and he's very, there are a lot of people within the African American community who were very, were not very happy with, certainly with Martin O'Malley, but for what he did when he was mayor of Baltimore, which is what he served 8 years as mayor before he was served 8 years as governor. I think part of it, though, in terms of O'Malley was more so, I guess, from an ethereal point of view, because you have people in there, everyone else is in their 60s or their 70s, and then you have this 50-year-old guy standing there. I mean, in many respects, he can represent himself, I think, as the future of the Democratic Party in terms of saying, you know, these people are all kind of, you know, I guess you could say kind of where the Democratic Party has been. I mean, he didn't really represent this, so I'm just saying where people might think optically. They're looking at Martin O'Malley, and Martin O'Malley is really the only young guy up there. On the Republican side, you know, you have someone like Marco Rubio, who's only 44 years old, and I think he kind of stands out when you're looking against him versus someone like Donald Trump or somebody like Ben Carson, somebody like Jeb Bush, who are all in their 60s. So I thought he kind of benefited in that. Lincoln Chafee, I thought, actually missed what I think he should have done. And I think the people he really should be appealing to are the Ron Paul supporters. Because Lincoln Chafee, if you look at him on foreign policy, I'm not talking about domestic policy, but I'm talking about foreign policy specifically, he is about as close to Ron Paul as you can, as any other candidate in the race. Rand Paul is no longer close to him. He's become more of a realist. He say we should increase military. He's talking about, you know, getting tougher with the Russians. Lincoln Chafee talked at the end about how being the peace candidate, it's a very similitude between what he's saying and what Ron Paul's saying. And he talks about, he's the only candidate, by the way, who I think has completely disavowed the use of predator drone strikes. And he said, he's actually talked about, for example, the reasons for the September 11th attacks. And he said that was one of the reasons when he looked into going into Iraq. And he said that, you know, we had to look at this type of stuff. And he talked about aversion to foreign entanglements. I think he should have made a direct pitch to the Ron Paul supporters, because a lot of them weren't necessarily Republicans per se. They were more anti-war people. You know, I remember seeing people with Dennis Kucinich stickers and Ron Paul stickers on their cars, and you look at them and say, those two don't seem to have a lot in common, but on foreign policy they do. So I thought that's where he really kind of missed his calling.
I agree. He was not real strong. We're talking about Chafee here, so I'm with you there. It was interesting debate. I don't think it's going to change the trajectory of the race. And so
no.
if that's a win for Clinton, and it is, then I guess she wins. I want to play, but the media, though, playing this up is like this giant knockout or really very, very impressive. You know, I was really taken aback by what Lizza wrote, which was Ryan Lizza at The New Yorker, which is she won because all the others were terrible. It just is that, I don't know what debate he was watching.
True at all.
It's just not true. Bernie Sanders was not terrible at all. I thought he was very strong. I thought she was good. I'm not putting her down. I'm saying that's just not a correct assessment. I don't know what he was watching. The New York Times says she was so commanding at this debate that even her greatest vulnerability worked to her advantage, which is, of course, the emails. And it worked to her advantage to the extent it did because of the way Sanders handled it. Let me play this for you. This is from actually Fox News, but this is Frank Luntz's focus group discussion after the fact, and I think it's very interesting, Rich, so let's go to it.
Something. The highest moment of the debate, the one that this group thought was absolutely incredible, was about Hillary Clinton, but it wasn't delivered by Hillary Clinton, it was delivered by Bernie Sanders. Let's listen.
Let me say something that may not be great politics, but I think the secretary is right.
And that is that the American people are sick and tired of hearing about your damn emails.
Thank you. Thank you.
All right. So is he right, Rich? Is he right when he said it may not be politically expedient? Was this a political blunder by Bernie Sanders? Now, he got huge praise. I mean, they were off the charts with those numbers. But go ahead.
Yeah, I'm sorry. First of all, it would be hard for me to believe that that line was not orchestrated. You know, obviously the emails are going to come up, and obviously the press is going to quote him into going after Hillary on the emails. I mean, Lincoln Chafee went after her a little bit and talking about, you know, in his opening statement how, and in his closing statement too, by the way, about how he's had no ethics scandals, and, you know, being a Rhode Island politician, I know that's rare, but It was interesting. I think that it can work both ways, and I'm kind of having a mixed mind about this. On the one hand, he comes off as the good guy. This is kind of part of his message. A lot of people that like him because he talks about how in his entire political career, he's never run a negative ad. He's not running against anybody. He's running more or less for something. And I think there are a lot of people who are kind of sick and tired of the American politics. They're sick and tired of, you know, the Republican Party, the Democratic Party going after each other all the time. They're sick and tired of candidates doing that. But he took the issue off the table for himself. Now, if this becomes a two-person race, if there's a debate between just those two, if Martin O'Malley, Lincoln Chafee, and Jim Webb are excluded from a future debate, and there's really something for him to go after Hillary on other than the issues, that would be something that he would be able to go after him on. Or for that matter, even if he can make an electability issue out of it, he could say to Hillary, he could say, you know, we're going to go into a general election campaign, and we're giving a gift to the Republican Party. The Republican Party is going to continue to bring up the emails. And that would definitely be to his politically advantageous to him. He can't do that anymore. He's taken that issue off the table. He's saying, you know, he's using the good guy image on one hand is benefiting him, but on the other side, you know, it's an issue he can no longer use against him. So I'm kind of in a mixed mind about that. But my guess is that if it really comes down to, you know, Bernie Sanders wins the New Hampshire primary and then Hillary Clinton really goes after and starts attacking Bernie Sanders, like, you know, she's done, for example, with Obama, Bernie Sanders does not have that as a retort.
Yeah, I agree. On the other hand, it would make it harder, wouldn't it, for her to go after him aggressively, you know, given the way he kind of took that off the table at the debate.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. I mean, he's really playing this image that, you know, it's all going to be about the issues. He's not going to go after personalities. It's just, you know, I've known Hillary Clinton since 1992 when I liked her. And he won't go after her directly. But, you know, as I say, if Hillary starts going after him because she really feels he's a threat, he's going to need some sort of a report.
Well, he can go after her.
This is not an issue to you.
I think he has other issues, but I also think he probably was just being honest. I think he, you know, again, as you said, it's all for him about the issues. That said, I agree. I lean towards Lincoln Chafee a little bit. I think this is relevant. I think it is an issue. I think it goes to her judgment. And a lot of people have said, not the Benghazi, that's all clearly phony, but just she made a very poor decision when she opted to use that private email, private server setup, and she did violate the regulation that required her to maintain. She could have used that setup, but she was required to preserve the emails at state. She didn't do that. I don't know how Sanders, though. Here's the thing. It's a little bit hard to explain in the soundbite style necessary to be effective in a debate. And I don't know how he brings it up without hurting himself more than he hurts her.
Yep. No, I do agree. And as I say, he did take that off the table. He actually, I think, gave a guess to someone like Martin O'Malley, Lincoln Chafee, I guess Jim Webber, who continue to, I guess, bring this up against him and against her. And they know that, you know, I guess they always have the possibility of there being some sort of a blowback now, though. If any of those brings against her, Bernie Sanders can say, guys, can we talk about the issues? You know, I mean, that in many respects, I think, would benefit her. But it really, you know, Hillary Clinton's been given two gifts in the past 2 weeks. One of them was from Bernie Sanders for saying, you know, I'm sick of your damn emails.
Yeah.
And the other was from Kevin McCarthy on her interview with Sean Hannity saying that the defense of the Benghazi committee was, you know, was to bring her poll numbers down. And notice she mentioned the name Kevin McCarthy in that debate as well. That's going to be a name, I think. If she wins in the general election, I think that, you know, you can play a drinking game every time she mentions the word Kevin McCarthy now.
How did Anderson Cooper do as moderator?
You know, some people were saying he did terse. I didn't think so at all. I thought he did a really good job at it, actually. I thought that, I mean, even in terms of a lot of the facts that candidates would bring up, for example, when they brought up the Glass-Steagall Act, he was right there in particular because, you know, 99% of the people are going to say, Glass-Steagall, what? you know, and he had a definition right there, and he described it. I thought he was very well in terms of, you know, bringing up certain issues against the candidates in terms of what they had said in the past. The only thing I think that did get by him a little bit was when they talked about Dodd-Frank, and I know that 99% of the people are saying, you know, who's Dodd-Frank?
Well, Dodd-Frank is really hard to explain, honestly. I mean, I have trouble.
Yeah.
I have huge trouble.
Yeah.
I understand Glass-Steagall. It's pretty easy.
It.
You know, Glass-Steagall, you separate investment banks from commercial banks, and we all can understand, hey, when I deposit my money into a checking or savings account, I don't want the bank, you know,
right.
using that to, you know, buy, you know, long puts, you know, buy puts, short or whatever they do with those things. So I think people get that. But Dodd-Frank is really difficult, all these issues of stress testing the banks, and they have to have this amount in their coffers, and they can only invest. That's really hard to understand. I think most people don't understand it. So it's tougher to, even people who study it, they don't understand all the nuances. Yeah, I thought,
you know, there was one,
go ahead, Rich, I'm sorry,
there's one other issue that that there wasn't an explanation of. It was kind of awkward. Lincoln Shaikh was talking about Section 215 of the Patriot
Lost
Act.
Lost everybody with that.
When he says Section 215, people are saying, either they're saying, does he actually know every section in it, or they're saying, what the hell is Section 215? You know, that was another thing, but obviously, I don't think he expected that, you know, someone's going to say 215. Lincoln Shaikh almost sounded in a sense like Bob Dole would always talk about, you know, all this legislation, and now he had been in the Senate since 1969. He'd bring up all these, you know, specific issues. Oh, I co-sponsored this, I co-sponsored that, and I co-sponsored, blah, blah, blah. And I think that in many respects, Lincoln Shaikh was kind of in that type of language, because I know that nobody knows what Section 215 is.
Yeah, that
maybe
would...
214 or 216, but not 215.
That didn't go over so well. Richard Bino with us. I want you to talk about Kevin McCarthy. We'll get off the debate in a moment, but just to stick just a little bit longer, I saw a lot last night. I wish Cooper did not bring up, as far as I recall, campaign finance reform. I think he should have. I think that's an important issue that he missed. And I think there also were other issues in terms of, you know, Clinton's truthiness, some of the issues with regard to her conflict of interest when she was at State Department with the CGI, Clinton Global Initiative, as well as her top two with Huma Abedin and Cheryl Mills, conflicts of interest they both had when they were working for. I think those are important matters that didn't get brought up. But by and large, we saw an awful lot, and I already knew who I was going to vote for. This didn't change that for me whatsoever. But here's where I think the Democratic National Committee really missed a trick. The candidates looked good. They were smart, sharp, especially the top two. They were on their game, regardless of what Ryan Lizza from The New Yorker says. They talked about issues. And by the way, to a degree, Rich, I think each was hurt because they're conservative on one issue, Clinton's hawkishness when it came to the war in Iraq, and also more recently Syria, and Sanders not as strong on guns as most liberals are in terms of control. But those issues would help them in a general election. So I think the DNC, by refusing to sanction more debates or allow them to debate in unsanctioned venues, really cost these candidates a chance to look good to the general electorate, especially moderate to conservative, not hard right, moderate to conservative voters in the heartland. Your reaction?
I completely agree with that. I think in terms of the debates, I think that, you know, the fact that it was, you know, Debbie Wasserman Schultz that supported Hillary over Obama in the last election, whether it's true or not, I mean, obviously it gives the impression that she's trying to, that she's kind of in the bag for Hillary almost. It's kind of similar in many respects from Ron Brown. I remember a lot of people thought that he was favoring Clinton over Jerry Brown because sometimes he'd go after Jerry Brown. I remember there was one debate where, I don't know if you remember this, but it was back in 1992 when Jerry Brown started going after Bill Clinton about his wife, about Hillary Clinton having, essentially Bill Clinton using his influence to bring business to the Rose Law Firm. And Jerry Brown starts looking at him and pointing his finger at him. And then Bill Clinton looks at him and says, "How dare you?" But Ron Brown, I believe, the next day, you know, kind of came out and said that was uncalled for. And it appeared that Ron Brown was kind of in it more for Bill Clinton than he was for Jerry Brown, even though the debate was still going on. So you're always going to get that impression. I agree. I think there needs to be a lot more debate in many respects. I think that the fact that this debate was so civil, I think, contrasts to the Republicans, certainly,
it can actually benefit them because you don't necessarily have, you know, you're certainly not going to have the scenario where Chris Christie and Rand Paul going after each other. You're not going to have Donald Trump up there, you know, essentially
calling people
at Rand
losers
Paul,
and yeah, loser, loser.
Or when he looked at Rand Paul and said, you know, you're only at 1%, you shouldn't be up here. You know, I can't imagine Hillary Clinton looking at Jim Webb saying that. I think this is a lot more civil of a debate. But I actually thought, you know, what's interesting, when Hillary said the best question I think that Anderson Cooper asked, he said, are you progressive or liberal? And she said, I'm progressive, but I'm progressive so we can get things done. And I thought that was in many respects kind of a covert slap at Bernie Sanders because Sanders is seen as, you know,
I saw it that way too. That's exactly what I heard there. Yeah, but it was a fair slap, but it was a slap. He could push back. He could say, yeah, you got things done for Bush. You got him authorized to use force. Yeah, you did that. I mean, he could easily push back. But it was a fair response, I thought. We've got Rich Rubino with us, of course, from Huffington Post. And look out at HuffingtonPost.com for Rich's take, his write-up of the Democratic debate. He was live tweeting it last night. I, and he's in California right now giving us his time. We appreciate it. Just a couple more.
No, I'm in Massachusetts.
Oh, you were on the radio in Sacramento. Is that right when you sent me?
I was in the radio in Sacramento about an hour ago. So just doing it from home.
All right, good. So you're up there in the Bay State. All right, very nice indeed. Do you think there's a, do you feel a burn momentum or whatever they call it? Because, at least, The war on the internet does appear that Sanders has won. It's certainly raising all that money, almost as much as Hillary did in the third quarter, and almost all, you know, through the internet, small donations. The college kids, you know, anyone under 40, I think 35 or under 40, clearly he wins that vote by a pretty significant margin. Is that the vibe you get? I would think in a liberal state like Massachusetts, especially, you're near New Hampshire, you border Vermont, you're born in New Hampshire. What's your sense up there?
Yeah, in Massachusetts, it's actually interesting. You bring up Vermont as well. There's a disconnect between the politicians, mostly who are supporting Hillary, and a lot of the grassroots Democrats, particularly some of the more educated or wealthy Democrats who are supporting Bernie Sanders. Even in Vermont, by the way, if you look at, you have Patrick Leahy, you have the congressman at large, you have the sitting governor and the former governor Howard Dean all supporting Hillary Clinton. And then obviously the vast majority of Vermont people support, the Vermont citizens support Bernie Sanders. But what's interesting, Bernie Sanders hasn't gotten over. It's the same constituency, frankly, supported Eugene McCarthy in 68, George McGovern in 72. They supported, they supported Jerry Hart. They supported Paul Tsongas. They supported Howard Dean. Is essentially the white liberals who come from generally upper middle class.
Social workers, psychologists, teachers, people who are not super rich but are doing pretty well and highly educated, and that you can't win an election with that group. I hear you exactly. Did Hillary Clinton, I won't say sew it up, but is she, how is she sleeping right now? Or how was she sleeping last night? Better?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And, I mean, in terms of, you know, her calling card in many respects, it's kind of, you know, it's almost the same type of a constituency would go for someone like Hubert Humphrey, would go for certainly her husband, I guess, you know, even some losers like, you know, Dick Gephardt, for example. But, you know, she's going to have, assuming Joe Biden does not run, she's got an overwhelming support of the Hispanic community, of the African-American community. I think a lot of rank-and-file members of labor unions in the middle of the country tend to like her. Bernie Sanders' challenge right now is to get his support beyond the kind of, you know, upper-middle-class liberals who live in the suburbs, who are vociferous for him, who are giving him a lot of money. He really needs to get support from a lot. He needs to be that, you know, that blue-collar, you know, that fisherman or that you know, the steel worker in Ohio, and, you know, he has issues, one of them being the issue of free trade that he can actually appeal to people.
I think in the guns, too. You know what? Also, the guns will help with the Reagan Democrat.
Yeah, it will, but I don't know. But the problem with that is you wonder, I mean, he said he's distancing himself from that. He said, I've got a D-minus from the NRA. He's trying to distance himself from the positions he's taken on guns as much as possible. I can't actually imagine him specifically saying, you know, I mean, Howard Dean, when he ran, that was kind of the one issue he had to appeal to blue-collar voters, and he would say, I had an A rating from from the NRA. And he would
I don't remember
show
that.
Off that
wow,
point.
I don't remember
he would
that.
Show off that. He would show off that point and say, "I got an A rating." You know, Bernie Sanders, even though he voted against the Brady Bill five times, as Hillary Clinton reminded us, you know, he still is not an issue that he's necessarily very comfortable with.
He's not front
with.
And center. He's not front and center.
Oh, no, not at all. I think the issue, he has to talk about, you know, certainly the TPP, you know, the Trans-Pacific Partnership. That's one issue that he can bring up potentially, but, you know, how is he going to get support from those, you know, those blue-collar supporters in Ohio who may not necessarily support him, but, you know, support him on those types of issues? But, and that was the issue, the group, Hillary Clinton, remember what happened in the last election is that part of the reason she lost the primary was that the African Americans joined the kind of, you know, the kind of upper crust, I guess, the gentry liberals to support Barack Obama. So we had that coalition. So now Bernie Sanders essentially has a lot of those Obama supporters, the gentry liberals, but he doesn't also have the African Americans as well. So, you know, you wonder how do you necessarily...
Well, he tried, and he said he had a good Black Lives Matter answer. You know, that was very powerful. I thought he handled that as well as he could. It's going to be tough. Look, she's got a lot of money. She's got a lot of goodwill. It may not be possible. As I said earlier in the show, he's trying to thread a moving needle to beat her, and I don't know that it's possible. I thought he was about as good as he could be, but she herself, as you said, Rich Rubino, is a very formidable opponent. And I think she did herself favors last night with her performance. Certainly he didn't hurt himself, but she did well. Right, if we can, you mentioned Kevin McCarthy. I have had listeners call and say to me, I have not given nearly enough shrift. I haven't paid enough attention to the Republican implosion in the House of Representatives. My response is, I don't know how this really helps Democrats much. Fill us in. I mean, they got to get a leader in there, right? At some point. Was McCarthy, and let me focus you, because I'm unfocused. According to Jason Chaffetz, and according to 538.com, Nate Silver, Kevin McCarthy was never going to be the Speaker of the House, even before he spoke the truth on Hannity. Is that accurate? And then follow up, how badly is the Republican disarray? What does this do for the Democrats, if anything?
Yeah, I mean, the media, the problem was, well, first of all, it's just in the hierarchy, it's generally speaking, you know, the person who's the majority leader, when the speaker resigns, the majority leader becomes speaker. It's very rare that that's not the scenario. I mean, the only one of the example that comes to mind when that wasn't the case would have been when Newt Gingrich resigned, and then Bob Livingston was the one who was going to succeed and not Dick Armey, because Dick Armey, or for that matter, the whip on the blade, Dick Armey at the time was the majority leader, neither of them appeared to have the vote, so eventually they landed up appointing Denny Hastert, who was the deputy whip. But usually that's the hierarchy. And he said that he had the votes, which was 218, which is enough votes that he would need. But the Freedom Caucus said that, you know, that they weren't necessarily supporting him, and there were 40 members of the Freedom Caucus. So if he were to win, he would have had to get enough, he would have had to siphon off maybe 10 or 11 members of the Freedom Caucus, and he would have essentially won by, you know, essentially one or two votes. And the Freedom Caucus, of course, is supporting Daniel Webster, not the Daniel Webster who was, you know, a senator from New Hampshire and Massachusetts in the 1850s.
Who debated the devil. You're not talking about the man who debated the devil. I would think
not that one.
They'd be on the side of the devil, right? The Freedom Caucus.
This is the one from Bakersfield, California, who had a meteoric rise. He would have been the fastest to get to the speakership since Congressman Crisp in 1891. He was raised a lot of money. He succeeded Bill Thompson in California. This was obviously his dream. He'd been the chairman of the Republican Congressional Campaign Committee, was to become speaker. I think he figured out that, frankly, that he couldn't get the votes, and if he was going to get the votes, you know, it's going to be an absolute miserable job for him, because every time that he negotiates on anything with Nancy Pelosi, all of a sudden, you know, the Freedom Caucus is going to be there. So it appears that Paul Ryan would be perhaps the consensus choice, but they're not totally sold on him. They're still supporting Daniel Webster, the new Daniel Webster, I guess, but... I think that when you see a party in disarray generally, I mean, 1968 comes to mind. I think part of the reason that the Democrats lost to Richard Nixon that year was the Democrats appeared to be in disarray. I mean, you had Hubert Humphrey, you had Eugene McCarthy who had run against them in the primaries, not endorsing
them.
Well,
and Bobby Kennedy was assassinated, right? I mean, the odds-on favorite until he was murdered was Bobby Kennedy. So that added, you can't blame the Democrats for that one, though.
But I mean, it was just the whole appearance then at the convention when there were, you know, protests outside. The whole appearance was, and Hubert Humphrey later said this, was that the Democratic Party was in disarray, and that he thought that that was part of the reason that they lost was that Nixon was able to at least present a united front when, you know, at their convention down in Miami Beach that year. There wasn't necessarily as much dissent because you had the conservative wing led by Ronald Reagan, and then you had the liberals with Nelson Rockefeller. They all supported the kind of moderate Richard Nixon that year, and there was a consensus where on the Democratic side, you had those who were against the Vietnam War who would not support anybody who was associated with Lyndon Johnson, and then you had, you know, Hubert Humphrey trying to get those people, and you had Eugene McCarthy saying that, well, I'll support Hubert Humphrey, but I hope my supporters will suffer with me. So that was the kind of the disaffection there. So I think you do need a united party. And in terms of the Republican side, I mean, I think what you have with a lot of members of the Tea Party in Congress is they're ideologists first, and pragmatists second, and Republicans third. And I really what they're, I mean, so they came to Washington. Some of them have political experience and they came to Washington to get rid, to cut the government and to get into and to eradicate the national debt. And they're not necessarily here to stay very long. They're here for maybe, you know, give their self-imposed term limits. And they're really intransigent on a lot of things. They actually really believe something. And I think that they're very hard for the more institutionalist, you know, congressmen like Kevin McCarthy or John Boehner, who, you know, wanted to make more of a career in the United States Congress, who had, you know, somebody who had served in legislatures before, or served an aging congressman in the case of Kevin McCarthy. I think that that's kind of an interesting dynamic. It's kind of almost the career politician types versus those who were businessmen before, got angry in 2010, ran, and then, you know, were able to win in Republican districts, and they're really, in a sense, holding the Republican Party hostage toward any type of negotiations.
All right, so your view is Democrats should be cautiously optimistic, but of course we've got a long road between here and the Republican nomination, the Republican convention, and they may be fully united by that point.
But I can't. It's very hard for me to see. I mean, as they say, some on the right. If let's say they
because of the Freedom Caucus, because the Freedom Caucus is so intransigent, so unwilling to compromise in any way on their core values, which, you know, I think most of us look at and shake our heads as kind of crazy. I mean, they are crazy values. And you're saying that
they believe something.
Yeah, well, they believe what they believe is, you know, no, the climate change is a hoax, and you know, cutting taxes for the rich help the poor. But they also believe that they should shut down government if since the Democrats refuse to govern the way they want.
You know, they really don't see much. The Freedom Caucus, and I'm not talking. There are members of the Freedom Caucus that aren't necessarily as intransigent, and there are some that have been in there for a while, like Steve King's been there since 1989 from Iowa, for example, that have worked across party lines. Some do work across party lines, by the way, with Democrats and issues where the right kind of meets the left, for example, one of them being the truncation of military spending, because they're, you know, when they talk about being against government spending, they're not hypocrites in the sense that a lot of them will say, well, we're against government spending, but, you know, like Chris Christie, for example, but we really have to increase the military budget. They say, let's cut the military budget, too. So there are issues that they can work with Democrats on. And the other one would be legalization of marijuana, where the right kind of meets the left. But I think that, this isn't necessarily the Freedom Caucus members. There are a lot of kind of grassroots conservatives out there. Let's say Jeb Bush gets the nomination. The reaction of Laura Ingraham, the reaction of Rush Limbaugh, the reaction of Mark Levin, a lot in kind of the conservative intelligentsia, is going to be to tell their listeners necessarily that, you know, we have to go before the lesser of two evils again, and they're really going to kind of, I think, depress a lot of these voters. If Marco Rubio were to get the nomination, or he could potentially have to move a little bit to the right, and certainly on immigration, you have to disavow anything that he said about being part of the Gang of Eight. If it's John Kasich that gets the nomination, there's going to be a lot of depression on the conservative side.
Well, he took the Medicare money, right? Yeah. So that's going to
be. But if it's not,
go ahead.
I'm saying if it is somebody from the anti-establishment, whether it's Donald Trump or Ben Carson, they're really going to galvanize the right, but they're not going to galvanize anybody else. And there, it's going to be, you know, if it's somebody like Donald Trump or Ben Carson, I think you're going to have, you know, a Goldwater or a McGovern that galvanizes everybody on their side and then galvanizes everybody against them. And
so what you're saying is there's really a perfect storm that could, you know, blow a Democratic socialist into the White House if he can figure out a way to get past that that roadblock of Hillary Clinton. That's going to be tough, though. That's going to be the big challenge. Is that right, Rich? Oh, I guess we lost him. All right, phone number 844. He just dropped off. That was the weirdest thing. I mean, we're talking. It must be the phone. I don't know. 844-4HALG, 844-367-4254. Let me just give you a quick number from Wall Street at this point then. Dow's off 97 to 16,985. NASDAQ down 11 to 4786. S&P 500 is down 6 to 1998. Gold's up 13 ounce to 1178. Oil is down 40 cents per barrel at $46.27. And I'll tell you what, I have gone for quite a long time. I think it's been about an hour and a half or so without any break whatsoever. So let's do that break now. Media Matters, just a quick one. Let's play the same one we had earlier in the show. This is CNN blasting criticism of Benghazi whistleblower reporting. Interesting. Here we go.
This is the Media Matters Minute. I'm Eric Wusewal. On CNN's State of the Union, correspondent Jake Tapper interviewed Bradley Podlyska, a former staff member on the House Select Committee on Benghazi, who claims that the panel's work and focus has shifted. Here's Tapper.
This man says that committee's mission has changed and is now focused solely on how to put blame on former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, which the committee's Republican chairman, Trey Gowdy, has repeatedly denied.
This has become a partisan investigation. I do not know the reason for the hyperfocus on Hillary Clinton.
Following the interview, CNN.com noted that Chairman Gowdy, quote, criticized CNN's reporting of Podlyska's claims and complained that the network did not contact the Benghazi committee prior to the interview. CNN responded in a statement saying, quote, we categorically deny Benghazi committee chairman Trey Gowdy's statement about CNN, and quote, Chairman Gowdy was invited to discuss this on CNN and declined. Chairman Gowdy is wrong. For more on this and other stories, please visit MediaMatters.org.
All right, we got a few more minutes left in the show, about 15 minutes. Oh, here's Rich calling back. Let's get Rich right back. Hey, Rich, thanks. You just dropped off. That was the weirdest thing. I'm sure there was a problem with the whatever connection you had, but thanks. Let's just wrap it up because we've had...
the NSA.
Yeah, it's the NSA. You brought up the NSA. I was going to go in a slightly different direction, but... is this the perfect storm? Let's ask the question that you didn't answer. Is there a perfect storm brewing which, if somehow something happens that knocks Clinton off her perch, Bernie could actually become the next president, a Democratic Socialist, because of this internecine warfare on the right?
I still think it is extremely hard. It's a hard scenario to imagine. I think that the nominee on the Republican side would have to be either Donald Trump or Ben Carson, and they would have to continue to essentially be Donald Trump and Ben Carson. Carson would continue to, make some of the analogies like, you know, that he keeps on making and getting into the news about this. Basically, the way I see it is that if you have somebody who's on either the far left or the far right of the party, the only way they win is if their opponent is also on the far right or the far left of their party. If you have a moderate and against somebody who's on the far left or the far right, if you have somebody who's a center-right establishment candidate, then I think that they will breeze through. I think that person will win the White House, but it's very hard to envisage that scenario unless there's something really weird that happens, like a third party like Mike Bloomberg gets in, spends a lot of money, and runs the third party, and that's a real wild card.
All right, here's something that I really want to get into a little bit. You're a media guy, so you can discuss this. And I alluded to this: the establishment. Newspapers, the cable news networks, they all have Clinton in a landslide. And there's even an article in the New York Times this morning, who won and lost the Democratic debate. The web has its say. And according to Alan Rappaport, bloggers, commentators, and the Twitterati quickly weighed in, scoring winners and losers. Hillary Rodham Clinton was a clear victor. But you go to Huffington Post, Nicholas Pierce, who's a law student, he says Bernie Sanders won the debate, at least on the Internet. And then he gives some actual evidence for that claim, pointing out an online poll by Slate, which had Sanders winning by 75%. CNN's Facebook poll had Sanders winning by 79 to 84%. And Forbes pointed out that Bernie got many, many more new Twitter followers than Clinton. So what's going on here? Is Huffington Post, and they have been, that's your website. Huffington Post has been pretty pro-Bernie, I've noticed. I wouldn't say they're, ridiculous as well, but they're pro-Bernie. Are they getting it wrong, or is the New York Times getting it wrong? Because my sense, again, was it was relatively close, but I would think Bernie did do better with the online, the electronic voter type.
You know, that may be true, but I think that, you know, among those same people, I think Howard Dean would have won. I think certainly Ron Paul. If you look at the polls that they took right after the debates, Ron Paul would always win, and, you know, in terms of money, he'd always be raising more money than all the other Republicans. But you know what, though? It didn't necessarily translate into votes.
Absolutely.
But it translates into people that's, I mean, you know, it's just like when you, it's like if you see in a local race, you say one person's got a bunch of signs out there. You say, well, why did that person win? They had a bunch of signs. Well, that just means that their campaign, you know, they'll hit a lot of specific people that were really galvanized toward that specific candidate, running for, you know, town clerk or whatever, but that doesn't necessarily mean that everybody in the town that doesn't have is seeing those signs, and that, you know, it doesn't necessarily represent momentum of the campaign at the ballot box.
I agree with all that. Hold on one second. Let me just get this caller on. Caller, who do I have right now? Who's this?
I have Glenn.
Glenn, I'll get to you in just a sec. I have Rich back, too, so if you have a question for Glenn, I want you to ask it. No, I agree. I don't think winning the internet may mean very much, and we have all the conversations about how the big crowds that Sanders is bringing to the, you know, to various places doesn't mean very much, the rallies. But this is the point, is that you've got a direct a disagreement. The New York Times saying that Hillary won easily. She was the clear victor. But the Huffington Post saying, they're saying on the net. The New York Times is saying on the web, Clinton won. Huffington Post is saying on the web, Sanders won. And what I also notice is the two focus groups I was able to find, Frank Luntz and also Fusion, which is an offshoot of Univision, both their focus groups both had Sanders winning. So is the mainstream media, you know, trying to direct the race in one direction? Is that your sense, Rich? I don't quite think that. I mean, there's a conspiracy, but you do. Is it confirmation bias? Is that what's going on?
No, I think that there's just a disconnect between, you know, it's like just like when you see the crowds of Bernie Sanders and think, well, look at all these people. He must be doing better than Hillary. It just means that his supporters are more galvanized. But also remember, a lot of these supporters are young, and this is an issue. Whenever a candidate, always watch out for two things. First of all, when a candidate has a lot of young, for those young who are really galvanized, once comes to come election day, don't necessarily show up to the polls. And secondly, remember, a lot of the candidates, we always talk about, you know, when they're going to get the non-voters. Barry Goldwater in 64 talked about how he was going to win with a bunch of non-voters. Howard Dean talked about it. George McGovern talked about it. You know, the secret vote, all these people that don't vote in elections are going to be galvanized. The problem is very many of these non-voters don't vote. And they're not going to know when the election is, or they're just not going to, they're not going to want to stand in the line, or they're just, frankly, you know, they're interested in what he has to, they're interested in being a part of almost like a fellow traveler. They're interested in being part of, you know, a bandwagon. They're interested in perhaps going to the rallies and listening. That doesn't necessarily mean it translates into votes. Hillary is going to have, or Joe Biden for that matter, are going to have organization. They're going to have organizations like the National Teachers Union. They're going to be able to get people to the polls, drive people to the polls. They're going to have an infrastructure in all these precincts. You know, Bernie Sanders right now, a lot of these people that are coming, you know, and this could be, I could be wrong on this. I mean, these people could potentially be going out as well, but a lot of these people could just be, you know, fellow travelers who, just like during the anti-Vietnam War protests, there were a lot of people who were just there because all their friends were there. I think that you always have that scenario, and you always have to watch out for that. You know, people that are just kind of being brought along by friends who just like the idea of being for something that's kind of unique and something that they're friends are for.
Let's go to Glenn. And Glenn, by the way, sent me an email to let me know how much he enjoyed your commentary, Rich. Glenn, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
Hi, Rich. Great.
Hey, Glenn. How are you?
I'm good. I have a question. I'm curious, like, this is a year and a month away from the election, where we think Bernie stands today versus Obama, you know, like, it seems like his momentum is just getting going. I think he could have done a little bit better last night on a couple of questions he was asked, and I don't think he, like, gained ground on Hillary. However, I would like to know, like, where is he in relationship to what was happening 8 years ago, because Obama really picked up steam pretty late.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a great question. I think that the thing that Barack Obama had that turned it around for him, look at polls right around the time Barack Obama announced. A lot of the African Americans, you know, in really, the preponderance of African Americans were for Hillary, not Barack Obama. Remember, Bill Clinton was supposedly the first black president. Tony Morrison said he had, you know, he had a 91% job approval rating amongst African Americans. That's when it started to turn around, I think, and the African Americans started to gravitate toward Barack Obama, and that's the advantage that he had that Bernie Sanders doesn't have. I think that was part of the reason why, you know, why Barack Obama started to really win the poll.
Ooh, we're getting some sketchy audio there. So you're saying,
when did
Obama jump, when did his poll numbers jump? Rich, that's where you were when we lost you for just an instant.
Okay, I'm sorry. I don't remember exactly when. My guess is that it was around November when people really thought that this guy could win.
Yeah.
And I think that that was because he had the white intellectuals, which Bernie Sanders, he has the white intellectuals, he has the people in the college campuses. He has the left wing of the Democratic Party. He has a lot of the social liberals. But he does not have the African Americans and the Hispanics, which is what, well, they're not just the Hispanics. Let me take those out for a second because a lot of those were for Hillary. But the African Americans it was the African Americans and white liberal coalition that put Barack Obama over the edge. And Bernie Sanders has a lot of work to do in the African American community because look at the polls. You know, he's right around 7-8% in the African American community right now. He has to siphon a lot of votes away from Hillary, and that's one thing that potentially Joe Biden getting into the race, potentially Joe Biden would be the vice president of the first African-American president, so perhaps the African-American votes would split amongst those two, and then which would certainly benefit, would benefit Bernie Sanders.
Well, that's right. Sanders really will be harmed when, and I believe it will happen, Biden announces he's not running.
I do, too.
Glenn, final comment from you.
Just a great response. I'm a huge Bernie Sanders fan. I do think he was a little bit flummoxed when he asked about, he didn't have his answer down for guns, and also when he just made a couple of, he was just off.
I'm going to let you go. Got a little bit of noise in the background. Yeah, we agree. We talked about the guns issue before. That wasn't his best moment, no question about it. Hey, Rich, really, thank you so much. You gave me about 50-plus minutes. I so appreciate it, and the listeners as well. Take care. Have a great day, and we'll look forward to your article.
Oh, no, thank you. Thank you, and thanks for calling, Glenn. I thought that was going to be Glenn Beck for a minute.
Okay, not Glenn Beck. I've never spoken to him. I will post this interview, though, at HalGinsberg.com in the archives. So the whole show will be up there, and I'll put where your interview is in it. Thanks again, Rich. Take care, buddy. And we'll get Rich back at some point. Again, of course, soon. Maybe after the next debate, if not before. Okay, we're just about at the end of the show. A bit of a dichotomy there between obviously the corporate media all rushing to declare Clinton the big winner versus the Twitterverse, the internet. And the focus groups, the Frank Luntz focus group and the Fusion focus group, both having Sanders the winner. I think that's something to really bear in mind, how the corporate media and the pundits have gone in one direction, and it's clearly a different direction than the metrics. The metrics would show. The metrics meaning how did the focus groups decide? What did they decide? What did they think? What do voters who vote on these online polls, and we know they're not scientific, but it just, there's clearly a disconnect between the metrics that we can look at and the actual declarations by the important people, as Paul Krugman very interestingly calls it. All right, before we go, I thought this was interesting. I did not hear the debate. I did not hear the conversation about pot. I did not hear that. So I was going to let's see if we can get a little bit in here about the marijuana. So here we go.
I'm going to go to Juan Carlos Lopez. Thank you, Anderson. Senator Sanders, right here in Nevada, there will be a measure to legalize recreational marijuana on the 2016 ballot. You said you smoked marijuana twice. It didn't quite work for you. If you were a Nevada resident, how would you vote?
I suspect I would vote yes. And I would vote yes, because I am seeing in this country too many lives being destroyed for nonviolent offenses. We have a criminal justice system that lets CEOs on Wall Street walk away, and yet we are imprisoning or giving jail sentences to young people who are smoking marijuana. I think we have to think through this war on drugs, which has done an enormous amount of damage. We need to rethink our criminal justice system, and we've got a lot of work to do in that area.
Secretary Clinton, you told Christiana Amanpour you didn't smoke pot when you were young, and you're not going to start now. When asked about legalizing recreational marijuana, you told her, let's wait and see how it plays out in Colorado and Washington. It's been more than a year since you said that. Are you ready to take a position tonight?
No. I think that we have the opportunity through the states that are pursuing recreational marijuana to find out a lot more than we know today. I do support the use of medical marijuana, and I think even there we need to do a lot more research so that we know exactly how we're going to help people for whom medical marijuana provides relief. So I think we're just at the beginning, but I agree completely with the idea that we have got to stop imprisoning people who use marijuana. Therefore, we need more states, cities, and the federal government to begin to address this so that we don't have this terrible result that Senator Sanders was talking about, where we have a huge population in our prisons for nonviolent, low-level offenses that are primarily due to marijuana.
Secretary, no, I'm going to stop you. I think that's a clear distinction between the two. And this is really who, you know, Hillary, this is one of her weaknesses, let's face it, study issue. She doesn't like to take, a strong position on a controversial issue. And legalizing marijuana is controversial in the sense that many Americans are afraid to say they support it. But it's clearly the right move. There's no controversy about whether it's right. It is right. It's like global warming. There's no controversy about whether it's true. It is true. Humans are causing it. But it's controversial because the right wing has scared a lot of people into believing it's a hoax, fooled a lot of people into believing it's a hoax, suckered a lot of people into believing it's a hoax. But it's not really controversial in the sense of whether it's true or not. Well, with pot, the evidence is so overwhelming that we should legalize it. But Clinton can't say that. Bernie has no trouble saying that. And I think this is why he's a better candidate. I mean, look, there's a lot of reasons he's a better candidate. He's not compromised by corporate money, by corporate backing. He gets the two biggest issues we face in the world that we have to address are economic injustice and environmental injustice, environmental degradation, and he's prepared to fight them. And everything follows off of those. He's the best candidate. Clinton's okay. She's not as good. That's my final word. I'll be back tomorrow morning. Thank you, Rich Rubino. Thank you, Jeremy Holden. You can hear the entire show at my website without any trouble. I'm going to post it, the whole 3 hours, including what was on before I came on the air, and including everything that might have been missed due to some skipping.